Chapter 1. Of the interview the curate and the barber had with Don Quixote about his malady. Side Amete Benengeli, in the second part of this history, and third sally of Don Quixote, says that the curate and the barber remained nearly a month without seeing him, lest they should recall or bring back to his recollection what had taken place. They did not, however, omit to visit his niece and housekeeper, and charge them to be careful to treat him with attention, and give him comforting things to eat, and such as were good for the heart and the brain, whence, it was plain to see, all his misfortune proceeded. The niece and housekeeper replied that they did so, and meant to do so with all possible care and assiduity, for they could perceive that their master was now and then beginning to show signs of being in his right mind. This gave great satisfaction to the curate and the barber, for they concluded they had taken the right course in carrying him off enchanted on the ox cart, as has been described in the first part of this great as well as accurate history, in the last chapter thereof. So they resolved to pay him a visit and test the improvement in his condition, although they thought it almost impossible that there could be any, and they agreed not to touch upon any point connected with knight-errantry so as not to run the risk of reopening wounds which were still so tender. They came to see him consequently, and found him sitting up in bed in a green baize waistcoat and a red Toledo cap, and so withered and dried up that he looked as if he had been turned into a mummy. They were very cordially received by him, they asked him after his health, and he talked to them about himself very naturally and in very well-chosen language. In the course of their conversation they fell to discussing what they call statecraft and systems of government, correcting this abuse and condemning that, reforming one practice and abolishing another, each of the three setting up for a new legislator, a modern Lycurgus, or a brand new Solon, and so completely did they remodel the state, that they seemed to have thrust it into a furnace and taken out something quite different from what they had put in, and on all the subjects they dealt with, Don Quixote spoke with such good sense that the pair of examiners were fully convinced that he was quite recovered and in his full senses. The niece and housekeeper were present at the conversation and could not find words enough to express their thanks to God at seeing their master so clear in his mind. The curate, however, changing his original plan, which was to avoid touching upon matters of chivalry, resolved to test Don Quixote's recovery thoroughly, and see whether it were genuine or not, and so, from one subject to another, he came at last to talk of the news that had come from the capital, and, among other things, he said it was considered certain that the Turk was coming down with a powerful fleet, and that no one knew what his purpose was, or when the great storm would burst, and that all Christendom was in apprehension of this, which almost every year calls us to arms, and that His Majesty had made provision for the security of the coasts of Naples and Sicily and the island of Malta. To this Don Quixote replied, His Majesty has acted like a prudent warrior in providing for the safety of his realms in time, so that the enemy may not find him unprepared, but if my advice were taken I would recommend him to adopt a measure which at present, no doubt, His Majesty is very far from thinking of. The moment the curate heard this he said to himself, God keep thee in his hand, poor Don Quixote, for it seems to me thou art precipitating thyself from the height of thy madness into the profound abyss of thy simplicity. But the barber, who had the same suspicion as the curate, asked Don Quixote what would be his advice as to the measures that he said ought to be adopted, for perhaps it might prove to be one that would have to be added to the list of the many impertinent suggestions that people were in the habit of offering to princes. Mine, Master Shaver, said Don Quixote, will not be impertinent, but, on the contrary, pertinent. I don't mean that, said the barber, but that experience has shown that all or most of the expedients which are proposed to His Majesty are either impossible, or absurd, or injurious to the king and to the kingdom. Mine, however, replied Don Quixote, is neither impossible nor absurd, but the easiest, the most reasonable, the readiest and most expeditious that could suggest itself to any projector's mind. You take a long time to tell it, Señor Don Quixote, said the curate. I don't choose to tell it here, now, said Don Quixote, and have it reach the ears of the lords of the council tomorrow morning, and some other carry off the thanks and rewards of my trouble. For my part, said the barber, I give my word here and before God that I will not repeat what your worship says, to king, rook or earthly mon on oath I learned from the ballad of the curate, who, in the prelude, told the king of the thief who had robbed him of the 100 gold crowns and his pacing mule. I am not versed in stories, said Don Quixote, but I know the oath is a good one, because I know the barber to be an honest fellow. Even if he were not, said the curate, I will go bail and answer for him that in this matter he will be as silent as a dummy, under pain of paying any penalty that may be pronounced. And who will be security for you, Señor Curate? Said Don Quixote. My profession, replied the curate, which is to keep secrets. Odds body! Said Don Quixote at this, What more has His Majesty to do but to command, by public proclamation, all the knights errant that are scattered over Spain to assemble on a fixed day in the capital, for even if no more than half a dozen come, there may be one among them who alone will suffice to destroy the entire might of the Turk. Give me your attention and follow me. Is it, pray, any new thing for a single knight errant to demolish an army of 200,000 men, as if they all had but one throat or were made of sugar paste? Nay, tell me, how many histories are there filled with these marvels? If only, in an evil hour for me, I don't speak for anyone else, the famous Don Belianis were alive now, or any one of the innumerable progeny of Amadis of Gaul. If any of these were alive today, and were to come face to face with the Turk, by my faith, I would not give much for the Turk's chance. But God will have regard for His people, and will provide some one, who, if not so valiant as the knights errant of yore, at least will not be inferior to them in spirit, but God knows what I mean, and I say no more. Alas! Exclaimed the niece at this, may I die if my master does not want to turn knight errant again, to which Don Quixote replied, a knight errant I shall die, and let the Turk come down or go up when he likes, and in as strong force as he can, once more I say, God knows what I mean. But here the barber said, I ask your worships to give me leave to tell a short story of something that happened in Seville, which comes so pat to the purpose just now that I should like greatly to tell it. Don Quixote gave him leave, and the rest prepared to listen, and he began thus. In the madhouse at Seville there was a man whom his relations had placed there as being out of his mind. He was a graduate of Osuna in canon law, but even if he had been of Salamanca, it was the opinion of most people that he would have been mad all the same. This graduate, after some years of confinement, took it into his head that he was sane and in his full senses, and under this impression wrote to the archbishop, entreating him earnestly, and in very correct language, to have him released from the misery in which he was living, for by God's mercy he had now recovered his lost reason, though his relations, in order to enjoy his property, kept him there, and, in spite of the truth, would make him out to be mad until his dying day. The archbishop, moved by repeated sensible, well-written letters, directed one of his chaplains to make inquiry of the madhouse as to the truth of the licentiate's statements, and to have an interview with the madman himself, and, if it should appear that he was in his senses, to take him out and restore him to liberty. The chaplain did so, and the governor assured him that the man was still mad, and that though he often spoke like a highly intelligent person, he would in the end break out into nonsense that in quantity and quality counterbalanced all the sensible things he had said before, as might be easily tested by talking to him. The chaplain resolved to try the experiment, and obtaining access to the madman conversed with him for an hour or more, during the whole of which time he never uttered a word that was incoherent or absurd, but, on the contrary, spoke so rationally that the chaplain was compelled to believe him to be sane. Among other things, he said the governor was against him, not to lose the presents his relations made him for reporting him still mad but with lucid intervals, and that the worst foe he had in his misfortune was his large property. For in order to enjoy it his enemies disparaged and threw doubts upon the mercy our Lord had shown him in turning him from a brute beast into a man. In short, he spoke in such a way that he cast suspicion on the governor, and made his relations appear covetous and heartless, and himself so rational that the chaplain determined to take him away with him that the archbishop might see him, and ascertain for himself the truth of the matter. Yielding to this conviction, the worthy chaplain begged the governor to have the clothes in which the licentiate had entered the house given to him. The governor again bade him beware of what he was doing, as the licentiate was beyond a doubt still mad, but all his cautions and warnings were unavailing to dissuade the chaplain from taking him away. The governor, seeing that it was the order of the archbishop, obeyed, and they dressed the licentiate in his own clothes, which were new and decent. He, as soon as he saw himself clothed like one in his senses, and divested of the appearance of a madman, entreated the chaplain to permit him in charity to go and take leave of his comrades the madman. The chaplain said he would go with him to see what madmen there were in the house, so they went upstairs, and with them some of those who were present. Approaching a cage in which there was a furious madman, though just at that moment calm and quiet, the licentiate said to him, Brother, think if you have any commands for me, for I am going home, as God has been pleased, in His infinite goodness and mercy, without any merit of mine, to restore me my reason. I am now cured and in my senses, for with God's power nothing is impossible. Have strong hope and trust in Him, for as He has restored me to my original condition, so likewise He will restore you if you trust in Him. I will take care to send you some good things to eat, and be sure you eat them, for I would have you know I am convinced, as one who has gone through it, that all this madness of ours comes of having the stomach empty and the brains full of wind. Take courage. Take courage. For despondency and misfortune breaks down health and brings on death. To all these words of the licentiate, another madman in a cage opposite that of the furious one was listening, and raising himself up from an old mat on which he lay stark naked, he asked in a loud voice who it was that was going away cured and in his senses. The licentiate answered, "It is I, brother, who am going. I have now no need to remain here any longer, for which I return infinite thanks to heaven that has had so great mercy upon me." "Mind what you are saying, licentiate, don't let the devil deceive you," replied the madman. "Keep quiet, stay where you are, and you will save yourself the trouble of coming back." "I know I am cured," returned the licentiate, "and that I shall not have to go stations again."
"You cured," said the madman, "well, we shall see, God be with you, but I swear to you by Jupiter, whose majesty I represent on earth, that for this crime alone, which Seville is committing today in releasing you from this house, and treating you as if you were in your senses, I shall have to inflict such a punishment on it as will be remembered for ages and ages, amen. Dost thou not know, thou miserable little licentiate, that I can do it, being, as I say, Jupiter the Thunderer, who hold in my hands the fiery bolts with which I am able and am wont to threaten and lay waste the world. But in one way only will I punish this ignorant town, and that is by not raining upon it, nor on any part of its district or territory, for 3 whole years, to be reckoned from the day and moment when this threat is pronounced. Thou free, thou cured, thou in thy senses. And I mad, I disordered, I bound. I will as soon think of sending rain as of hanging myself." Those present stood listening to the words and exclamations of the madman, but our licentiate, turning to the chaplain and seizing him by the hands, said to him, "Be not uneasy, senor, attach no importance to what this madman has said, for if he is Jupiter and will not send rain, I, who am Neptune, the father and god of the waters, will rain as often as it pleases me and may be needful." The governor and the bystanders laughed, and at their laughter the chaplain was half ashamed, and he replied, "For all that, Senor Neptune, it will not do to vex Senor Jupiter, remain where you are, and some other day, when there is a better opportunity and more time, we will come back for you." So they stripped the licentiate, and he was left where he was, and that's the end of the story.
"So that's the story, Master Barber," said Don Quixote, "which came in so pat to the purpose that you could not help telling it. Master Shaver, Master Shaver, how blind is he who cannot see through a sieve? Is it possible that you do not know that comparisons of wit with wit, valor with valor, beauty with beauty, birth with birth, are always odious and unwelcome? I, Master Barber, am not Neptune, the god of the waters, nor do I try to make anyone take me for an astute man, for I am not one. My only endeavor is to convince the world of the mistake it makes in not reviving in itself the happy time when the order of knight-errantry was in the field. But our depraved age does not deserve to enjoy such a blessing as those ages enjoyed when knights-errant took upon their shoulders the defense of kingdoms, the protection of damsels, the succor of orphans and minors, the chastisement of the proud, and the recompense of the humble. With the knights of these days, for the most part, it is the damask, brocade, and rich stuffs they wear, that rustle as they go, not the chain mail of their armor. No knight nowadays sleeps in the open field exposed to the inclemency of heaven, and in full panoply from head to foot. No one now takes a nap, as they call it, without drawing his feet out of the stirrups, and leaning upon his lance, as the knights errant used to do. No one now, issuing from the wood, penetrates yonder mountains, and then treads the barren, lonely shore of the sea, mostly a tempestuous and stormy one, and finding on the beach a little bark without oars, sail, mast, or tackling of any kind, in the intrepidity of his heart flings himself into it and commits himself to the wrathful billows of the deep sea, that one moment lift him up to heaven and the next plunge him into the depths, and opposing his breast to the irresistible gale, finds himself, when he least expects it, 3,000 leagues and more away from the place where he embarked, and leaping ashore in a remote and unknown land has adventures that deserve to be written, not on parchment, but on brass. But now sloth triumphs over energy, indolence over exertion, vice over virtue, arrogance over courage, and theory over practice in arms, which flourished and shone only in the golden ages and in knights errant. For tell me, who is more virtuous and more valiant than the famous Amadis of Gaul? Who more discreet than Palmerin of England? Who more gracious and easy than Tirantal Blanco? Who more courtly than Lisuarte of Greece? Who more slashed or slashing than Don Belianis? Who more intrepid than Perion of Gaul? Who more ready to face danger than Felix Marte of Hircania? Who more sincere than Esplanian? Who more impetuous than Don Sarangilio of Thrace? Who more bold than Rodamonte? Who more prudent than King Sobrino? Who more daring than Rinaldos? Who more invincible than Roland? And who more gallant and courteous than Ruggiero,
from whom the Dukes of Ferrara of the present day are descended, according to Turpin in his Cosmography. All these knights, and many more that I could name, Señor Curate, were knights-errant, the light and glory of chivalry. These, or such as these, I would have to carry out my plan, and in that case His Majesty would find himself well served and would save great expense, and the Turk would be left tearing his beard. And so I will stay where I am, as the chaplain does not take me away, and if Jupiter, as the barber has told us, will not send rain, here am I, and I will reign when I please. I say this that Master Basin may know that I understand him. Indeed, Señor Don Quixote, said the barber, I did not mean it in that way, and, so help me God, my intention was good, and your worship ought not to be vexed. As to whether I ought to be vexed or not, returned Don Quixote, I myself am the best judge. Hereupon the curate observed, I have hardly said a word as yet, and I would gladly be relieved of a doubt, arising from what Don Quixote has said, that worries and works my conscience. The Señor Curate has leave for more than that, returned Don Quixote, so he may declare his doubt, for it is not pleasant to have a doubt on one's conscience. Well then, with that permission, said the curate, I say my doubt is that, all I can do, I cannot persuade myself that the whole pack of knights-errant you, Señor Don Quixote, have mentioned, were really and truly persons of flesh and blood, that ever lived in the world. On the contrary, I suspect it to be all fiction, fable, and falsehood, and dreams told by men awakened from sleep, or rather still half asleep. That is another mistake, replied Don Quixote, into which many have fallen who do not believe that there ever were such knights in the world, and I have often, with divers people and on divers occasions, tried to expose this almost universal error to the light of truth. Sometimes I have not been successful in my purpose, sometimes I have, supporting it upon the shoulders of the truth, which truth is so clear that I can almost say I have with my own eyes seen Amadis of Gaul, who was a man of lofty stature, fair complexion, with a handsome though black beard, of a countenance between gentle and stern in expression, sparing of words, slow to anger, and quick to put it away from him, and as I have depicted Amadis, so I could, I think, portray and describe all the knights-errant that are in all the histories in the world, for by the perception I have that they were what their histories describe, and by the deeds they did and the dispositions they displayed, it is possible, with the aid of sound philosophy, to deduce their features, complexion, and stature. How big, in your worship's opinion, may the giant Morgante have been, Señor Don Quixote? Asked the barber. With regard to giants, replied Don Quixote, opinions differ as to whether there ever were any or not in the world, but the Holy Scripture, which cannot err by a jot from the truth, shows us that there were, when it gives us the history of that big Philistine, Goliath, who was 7 cubits and a half in height, which is a huge size. Likewise, in the island of Sicily, there have been found leg bones and arm bones so large that their size makes it plain that their owners were giants, and as tall as great towers. Geometry puts this fact beyond a doubt. But, for all that, I cannot speak with certainty as to the size of Morgante, though I suspect he cannot have been very tall, and I am inclined to be of this opinion because I find in the history in which his deeds are particularly mentioned, that he frequently slept under a roof and as he found houses to contain him, it is clear that his bulk could not have been anything excessive. That is true, said the curate, and yielding to the enjoyment of hearing such nonsense, he asked him what was his notion of the features of Rinaldos of Montalban, and Don Roland and the rest of the 12 peers of France, for they were all knights-errant. As for Rinaldos, replied Don Quixote, I venture to say that he was broad-faced, of ruddy complexion, with roguish and somewhat prominent eyes, excessively punctilious and touchy, and given to the society of thieves and scapegraces. With regard to Roland, or Rodolando, or Orlando, for the histories call him by all these names, I am of opinion, and hold, that he was of middle height, broad-shouldered, rather bull-legged, swarthy-complexioned, red-bearded, with a hairy body and a severe expression of countenance, a man of few words, but very polite and well-bred. If Roland was not a more graceful person than your worship has described, said the curate, it is no wonder that the fair lady Angelica rejected him and left him for the gaiety, liveliness, and grace of that budding bearded little Moor to whom she surrendered herself, and she showed her sense in falling in love with the gentle softness of Medoro rather than the roughness of Roland. That Angelica, Señor Curate, returned Don Quixote, was a giddy damsel, flighty and somewhat wanton, and she left the world as full of her vagaries as of the fame of her beauty. She treated with scorn 1,000 gentlemen, men of valor and wisdom, and took up with a smooth-faced sprig of a page, without fortune or fame, except such reputation for gratitude as the affection he bore his friend got for him. The great poet who sang her beauty, the famous Ariosto, not caring to sing her adventures after her contemptible surrender, which probably were not over and above creditable, dropped her where he says. How she received the scepter of Cathay, some bard of Defterquill may sing some day. And this was no doubt a kind of prophecy, for poets are also called vates, that is to say diviners, and its truth was made plain, for since then a famous Andalusian poet has lamented and sung her tears, and another famous and rare poet, a Castilian, has sung her beauty. Tell me, Señor Don Quixote, said the barber here, among all those who praised her, has there been no poet to write a satire on this Lady Angelica? I can well believe, replied Don Quixote, that if Sacripante or Roland had been poets they would have given the damsel a trimming, for it is naturally the way with poets who have been scorned and rejected by their ladies, whether fictitious or not, in short by those whom they select as the ladies of their thoughts, to avenge themselves in satires and libels a vengeance, to be sure, unworthy of generous hearts, but up to the present I have not heard of any defamatory verse against the Lady Angelica, who turned the world upside down. Strange, said the curate, but at this moment they heard the housekeeper and the niece, who had previously withdrawn from the conversation, exclaiming aloud in the courtyard, and at the noise they all ran out. Chapter 2. Which treats of the notable altercation which Sancho Panza had with Don Quixote's niece, and housekeeper, together with other droll matters. The history relates that the outcry Don Quixote, the curate, and the barber heard came from the niece and the housekeeper exclaiming to Sancho, who was striving to force his way in to see Don Quixote while they held the door against him, what does the vagabond want in this house? Be off to your own, brother, for it is you, and no one else, that delude my master, and lead him astray, and take him tramping about the country. To which Sancho replied, devil's own housekeeper. It is I who am deluded, and led astray, and taken tramping about the country, and not thy master. He has carried me all over the world, and you are mightily mistaken. He enticed me away from home by a trick, promising me an island, which I am still waiting for. May evil islands choke thee, thou detestable Sancho, said the niece, what are islands? Is it something to eat, glutton and gormandizer that thou art? It is not something to eat, replied Sancho, but something to govern and rule, and better than four cities or four judgeships at court. For all that, said the housekeeper, you don't enter here, you bag of mischief and sack of knavery, go govern your house and dig your seed patch, and give over looking for islands or shylands. The curate and the barber listened with great amusement to the words of the three, but Don Quixote, uneasy lest Sancho should blab and blurt out a whole heap of mischievous stupidities, and touch upon points that might not be altogether to his credit, called to him and made the other two hold their tongues and let him come in. Sancho entered, and the curate and the barber took their leave of Don Quixote, of whose recovery they despaired when they saw how wedded he was to his crazy ideas, and how saturated with the nonsense of his unlucky chivalry, and said the curate to the barber, you will see, gossip, that when we are least thinking of it, our gentleman will be off once more for another flight. I have no doubt of it, returned the barber, but I do not wonder so much at the madness of the knight as at the simplicity of the squire, who has such a firm belief in all that about the island, that I suppose all the exposures that could be imagined would not get it out of his head. God help them, said the curate, and let us be on the lookout to see what comes of all these absurdities of the knight and squire, for it seems as if they had both been cast in the same mold, and the madness of the master without the simplicity of the man would not be worth a farthing. That is true, said the barber, and I should like very much to know what the pair are talking about at this moment. I promise you, said the curate, the niece or the housekeeper will tell us by and by, for they are not the ones to forget to listen. Meanwhile Don Quixote shut himself up in his room with Sancho, and when they were alone he said to him, it grieves me greatly, Sancho, that thou shouldst have said, and sayest, that I took thee out of thy cottage, when thou knowest I did not remain in my house. We sallied forth together, we took the road together, we wandered abroad together, we have had the same fortune and the same luck, if they blanketed thee once, they belabored me 100 times, and that is the only advantage I have of thee. That was only reasonable, replied Sancho, for, by what your worship says, misfortunes belong more properly to knights errant than to their squires. Thou art mistaken, Sancho, said Don Quixote, according to the maxim quando caput delay, etc. I don't understand any language but my own, said Sancho. I mean to say, said Don Quixote, that when the head suffers all the members suffer, and so, being thy lord and master, I am thy head, and thou a part of me as thou art my servant, and therefore any evil that affects or shall affect me should give thee pain, and what affects thee give pain to me. It should be so, said Sancho, but when I was blanketed as a member, My head was on the other side of the wall, looking on while I was flying through the air, and did not feel any pain whatever, and if the members are obliged to feel the suffering of the head, it should be obliged to feel their sufferings.
Dost thou mean to say now, Sancho, said Don Quixote, that I did not feel when they were blanketing thee? If thou dost, thou must not say so or think so, for I felt more pain than in spirit than thou didst in body. But let us put that aside for the present, for we shall have opportunities enough for considering and settling the point. Tell me, Sancho my friend, what do they say about me in the village here? What do the common people think of me? What do the hidalgos? What do the caballeros? What do they say of my valor, of my achievements, of my courtesy? How do they treat the task I have undertaken in reviving and restoring to the world the now forgotten order of chivalry? In short, Sancho, I would have thee tell me all that has come to thine ears on this subject, and thou art to tell me, without adding anything to the good or taking away anything from the bad, for it is the duty of loyal vessels to tell the truth to their lords just as it is and in its proper shape, not allowing flattery to add to it or any idle deference to lessen it. And I would have thee know, Sancho, that if the naked truth, undisguised by flattery, came to the ears of princes, times would be different, and other ages would be reckoned iron ages more than ours, which I hold to be the golden of these latter days. Profit by this advice, Sancho, and report to me clearly and faithfully the truth of what thou knowest touching what I have demanded of thee.
That I will do with all my heart, master, replied Sancho, provided your worship will not be vexed at what I say, as you wish me to say it out in all its nakedness, without putting any more clothes on it than it came to my knowledge in.
I will not be vexed at all, returned Don Quixote, thou mayest speak freely, Sancho, and without any beating about the bush.
Well then, said he, first of all, I have to tell you that the common people consider your worship a mighty great madman, and me no less a fool. The hidalgos say that, not keeping within the bounds of your quality of gentleman, you have assumed the don, and made a knight of yourself at a jump, with four vine stocks and a couple of acres of land, and never a shirt to your back. The caballeros say they do not want to have hidalgos setting up in opposition to them, particularly squire hidalgos who polish their own shoes and darn their black stockings with green silk.
That, said Don Quixote, does not apply to me, for I always go well dressed and never patched, ragged I may be, but ragged more from the wear and tear of arms than of time. As to your worship's valor, courtesy, accomplishments, and task, there is a variety of opinions. Some say, mad but droll, others, valiant but unlucky, others, courteous but meddling, and then they go into such a number of things that they don't leave a whole bone either in your worship or in myself.
Recollect, Sancho, said Don Quixote, that wherever virtue exists in an eminent degree it is persecuted. Few or none of the famous men that have lived escaped being calumniated by malice. Julius Caesar, the boldest, wisest, and bravest of captains, was charged with being ambitious, and not particularly cleanly in his dress, or pure in his morals. Of Alexander, whose deeds won him the name of great, they say that he was somewhat of a drunkard. Of Hercules, him of the many labors, it is said that he was lewd and luxurious. Of Don Galaor, the brother of Amadis of Gaul, it was whispered that he was over quarrelsome, and of his brother that he was lachrymose. So that, O Sancho, amongst all these calumnies against good men, mine may be let pass, since they are no more than thou hast said.
That's just where it is, body of my father.
Is there more, then? Asked Don Quixote.
There's the tail to be skinned yet, said Sancho, also far as cakes and fancy bread, but if your worship wants to know all about the calumnies they bring against you, I will fetch you one this instant who can tell you the whole of them without missing an atom, for last night the son of Bartholomew Carrasco, who has been studying at Salamanca, came home after having been made a bachelor, and when I went to welcome him, he told me that your worship's history is already abroad in books, with the title of the ingenious gentleman Don Quixote of La Mancha, and he says they mention me in it by my own name of Sancho Panza, and the lady Dulcinea del Toboso too, and divers things that happened to us when we were alone, so that I crossed myself in my wonder how the historian who wrote them down could have known them.
I promise thee, Sancho, said Don Quixote, the author of our history will be some sage enchanter, for to such nothing that they choose to write about is hidden.
What? Said Sancho, a sage and an enchanter.
Why, the bachelor Samson Carrasco, that is the name of him I spoke of, says the author of the history is called Cidamete Berengina.
That is a Moorish name, said Don Quixote.
Maybe so, replied Sancho, for I have heard say that the Moors are mostly great lovers of Berenginas.
Thou must have mistaken the surname of this side which means in Arabic Lord Sancho, observed Don Quixote.
Very likely, replied Sancho, but if your worship wishes me to fetch the bachelor I will go for him in a twinkling.
Thou wilt do me a great pleasure, my friend, said Don Quixote, for what thou hast told me has amazed me, and I shall not eat a morsel that will agree with me until I have heard all about it.
Then I am off for him, said Sancho, and leaving his master he went in quest of the bachelor, with whom he returned in a short time, and, all three together, they had a very droll colloquy.
Chapter 3. Of the laughable conversation that passed between Don Quixote, Sancho Panza, and the bachelor Samson Carrasco. Don Quixote remained very deep in thought, waiting for the bachelor Carrasco, from whom he was to hear how he himself had been put into a book as Sancho said, and he could not persuade himself that any such history could be in existence, for the blood of the enemies he had slain was not yet dry on the blade of his sword, and now they wanted to make out that his mighty achievements were going about in print. For all that, he fancied some sage, either a friend or an enemy, might, by the aid of magic, have given them to the press, if a friend, in order to magnify and exalt them above the most famous ever achieved by any knight-errant, if an enemy, to bring them to naught and degrade them below the meanest ever recorded of any low squire, though as he said to himself, the achievements of squires never were recorded. If, however, it were the fact that such a history were in existence, it must necessarily, being the story of a knight-errant, be grandiloquent, lofty, imposing, grand and true. With this he comforted himself somewhat, though it made him uncomfortable to think that the author was a Moor, judging by the title aside, and that no truth was to be looked for from Moors, as they are all impostors, cheats, and schemers. He was afraid he might have dealt with his love affairs in some indecorous fashion, that might tend to the discredit and prejudice of the purity of his lady Dulcinea del Toboso. He would have had him set forth the fidelity and respect he had always observed towards her, spurning queens, empresses, and damsels of all sorts, and keeping in check the impetuosity of his natural impulses. Absorbed and wrapped up in these and divers other cogitations, he was found by Sancho and Carrasco, whom Don Quixote received with great courtesy. The bachelor, though he was called Samson, was of no great bodily size, but he was a very great wag. He was of a sallow complexion, but very sharp-witted, somewhere about 24 years of age, with a round face, a flat nose, and a large mouth, all indications of a mischievous disposition and a love of fun and jokes, and of this he gave a sample as soon as he saw Don Quixote, by falling on his knees before him and saying, "Let me kiss your mightiness's hand, Señor Don Quixote of La Mancha, for, by the habit of Saint Peter that I wear, though I have no more than the first four orders, your worship is one of the most famous knights-errant that have ever been, or will be, all the world over. A blessing on Sidamete Benengeli, who has written the history of your great deeds, and a double blessing on that connoisseur who took the trouble of having it translated out of the Arabic into our Castilian vulgar tongue for the universal entertainment of the people." Don Quixote made him rise, and said, "So, then, it is true that there is a history of me, and that it was a Moor and a sage who wrote it?"
"So true is it, senor," said Samson, "that my belief is there are more than 12,000 volumes of the said history in print this very day. Only ask Portugal, Barcelona, and Valencia, where they have been printed, and moreover there is a report that it is being printed at Antwerp, and I am persuaded there will not be a country or language in which there will not be a translation of it."
"One of the things," here observed Don Quixote, "that ought to give most pleasure to a virtuous and eminent man is to find himself in his lifetime in print and in type, familiar in people's mouths with a good name. I say with a good name, for if it be the opposite, then there is no death to be compared to it."
"If it goes by good name and fame," said the bachelor, "your worship alone bears away the palm from all the knights-errant, for the Moor in his own language, and the Christian in his, have taken care to set before us your gallantry, your high courage in encountering dangers, your fortitude in adversity, your patience under misfortunes as well as wounds, the purity and continence of the platonic loves of your worship and my lady Doña Dulcinea del Toboso."
"I never heard my lady Dulcinea called Doña," observed Sancho here, "nothing more than the lady Dulcinea del Toboso, so here already the history is wrong."
"That is not an objection of any importance," replied Carrasco.
"Certainly not," said Don Quixote, "but tell me, Señor Bachelor, what deeds of mine are they that are made most of in this history?"
"On that point," replied the bachelor, "opinions differ, as tastes do. Some swear by the adventure of the windmills that your worship took to be Briareses and Giants, others by that of the Fulling Mills. One cries up the description of the two armies that afterwards took the appearance of two droves of sheep, another that of the dead body on its way to be buried at Segovia, a third says the liberation of the galley slaves is the best of all, and a fourth that nothing comes up to the affair with the Benedictine giants, and the battle with the valiant Biscayne. "Tell me, Señor Bachelor," said Sancho at this point, "does the adventure with the Yangzans come in, when our good Rocinante went hankering after dainties?"
"The sage has left nothing in the ink bottle," replied Samson. "He tells all and sets down everything, even to the capers that worthy Sancho cut in the blanket."
"I cut no capers in the blanket," returned Sancho. "In the ear I did, and more of them than I liked."
"There is no human history in the world, I suppose," said Don Quixote, "that has not its ups and downs, but more than others such as deal with chivalry, for they can never be entirely made up of prosperous adventures."
"For all that," replied the bachelor, "there are those who have read the history who say they would have been glad if the author had left out some of the countless cudgelings that were inflicted on Señor Don Quixote in various encounters."
"That's where the truth of the history comes in," said Sancho.
"At the same time they might fairly have passed them over in silence," observed Don Quixote, "for there is no need of recording events which do not change or affect the truth of history, if they tend to bring the hero of it into contempt. Aeneas was not in truth and earnest so pious as Virgil represents him, nor Ulysses so wise as Homer describes him."
"That is true," said Samson, "but it is one thing to write as a poet, another to write as a historian. The poet may describe or sing things, not as they were, but as they ought to have been, but the historian has to write them down, not as they ought to have been, but as they were, without adding anything to the truth or taking anything from it."
"Well then," said Sancho, "if this Señor Moor goes in for telling the truth, no doubt among my master's drubbings mine are to be found, for they never took the measure of his worship's shoulders without doing the same for my whole body, but I have no right to wonder at that, for, as my master himself says, the members must share the pain of the head."
"You are a sly dog, Sancho," said Don Quixote. "I' faith, you have no want of memory when you choose to remember."
"If I were to try to forget the thwacks they gave me," said Sancho, "my wheels would not let me, for they are still fresh on my ribs."
"Hush, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "and don't interrupt the bachelor, whom I entreat to go on and tell all that is said about me in this history."
"And about me," said Sancho, "for they say, too, that I am one of the principal personages in it."
"Personages, not personages, friend Sancho," said Samson.
"What?
Another word catcher," said Sancho, "if that's to be the way we shall not make an end in a lifetime."
"May God shorten mine, Sancho," returned the bachelor, "if you are not the second person in the history, and there are even some who would rather hear you talk than the cleverest in the whole book, though there are some, too, who say you showed yourself overcredulous in believing there was any possibility in the government of that island offered you by Señor Don Quixote."
"There is still sunshine on the wall," said Don Quixote, "and when Sancho is somewhat more advanced in life, with the experience that years bring, he will be fitter and better qualified for being a governor than he is at present."
"By God, master," said Sancho, "the island that I cannot govern with the years I have, I'll not be able to govern with the years of Methuselah. The difficulty is that the said island keeps its distance somewhere, I know not where, and not that there is any one of head in me to govern it."
"Leave it to God, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "for all will be in perhaps better than you think. No leaf on the tree stirs but by God's will."
"That is true," said Samson, "and if it be God's will, there will not be any want of a thousand islands, much less one, for Sancho to govern."
"I have seen governors in these parts," said Sancho, "that are not to be compared to my shoe sole, and for all that they are called your lordship and served on silver."
"Those are not governors of islands," observed Samson, "but of other governments of an easier kind. Those that govern islands must at least know grammar."
"I could manage the gram well enough," said Sancho, "but for the mar I have neither leaning nor liking, for I don't know what it is, but leaving this matter of the government in God's hands, to send me wherever it may be most to his service, I may tell you, Señor Bachelor Samson Carrasco, it has pleased me beyond measure that the author of this history should have spoken of me in such a way that what is said of me gives no offense, for, on the faith of a true squire, if he had said anything about me that was at all unbecoming an old Christian, such as I am, the deaf would have heard of it."
"That would be working miracles," said Samson.
"Miracles or no miracles," said Sancho, "let everyone mind how he speaks or writes about people, and not set down at random the first thing that comes into his head."
"One of the faults they find with this history," said the bachelor, "is that its author inserted in it a novel called Ill-Advised Curiosity, not that it is bad or ill-told, but that it is out of place and has nothing to do with the history of his worship Señor Don Quixote."
"I will bet the son of a dog has mixed the cabbages and the baskets," said Sancho.
"Then, I say," said Don Quixote, The author of my history was no sage, but some ignorant chatterer, who, in a haphazard and heedless way, set about writing it, let it turn out as it might, just as Orbaneja, the painter of Ubeda, used to do, who, when they asked him what he was painting, answered, "What it may turn out." Sometimes he would paint a cock in such a fashion, and so unlike, that he had to write alongside of it in Gothic letters, "This is a cock, and so it will be with my history," which will require commentary to make it intelligible. "No fear of that," returned Samson, "for it is so plain that there is nothing in it to puzzle over. The children turn its leaves, the young people read it, the grown men understand it, the old folk praise it. In a word, it is so thumbed, and read, and got by heart by people of all sorts, that the instant they see any lean hack, they say, 'There goes Rosinante.' And those that are most given to reading it are the pages, for there is not a lord's antechamber where there is not a Don Quixote to be found. One takes it up if another lays it down, this one pounces upon it, and that begs for it. In short, the said history is the most delightful and least injurious entertainment that has been hitherto seen, for there is not to be found in the whole of it even the semblance of an immodest word, or a thought that is other than Catholic. To write in any other way," said Don Quixote, "would not be to write truth, but falsehood, and historians who have recourse to falsehood ought to be burned, like those who coin false money, and I know not what could have led the author to have recourse to novels and irrelevant stories, when he had so much to write about in mine. No doubt he must have gone by the proverb with straw or with hay, etc., for by merely setting forth my thoughts, my sighs, my tears, my lofty purposes, my enterprises, he might have made a volume as large, or larger than all the works of El Tostado would make up. In fact, the conclusion I arrive at, Señor Bachelor, is, that to write histories, or books of any kind, there is need of great judgment and a ripe understanding. To give expression to humor, and write in a strain of graceful pleasantry, is the gift of great geniuses. The cleverest character in comedy is the clown, for he who would make people take him for a fool, must not be one. History is in a measure a sacred thing, for it should be true, and where the truth is, there God is, but notwithstanding this, there are some who write and fling books broadcast on the world as if they were fritters. There is no book so bad but it has something good in it," said the bachelor. "No doubt of that," replied Don Quixote, "but it often happens that those who have acquired and attained a well-deserved reputation by their writings, lose it entirely, or damage it in some degree, when they give them to the press." "The reason of that," said Samson, "is, that as printed works are examined leisurely, their faults are easily seen, and the greater the fame of the writer, the more closely are they scrutinized. Men famous for their genius, great poets, illustrious historians, are always, or most commonly, envied by those who take a particular delight and pleasure in criticizing the writings of others, without having produced any of their own." "That is no wonder," said Don Quixote, "for there are many divines who are no good for the pulpit, but excellent in detecting the defects or excesses of those who preach." "All that is true, Señor Don Quixote," said Carrasco, "but I wish such fault-finders were more lenient and less exacting, and did not pay so much attention to the spots on the bright sun of the work they grumble at. For if aliquando bonus dormitat Homerus, they should remember how long he remained awake to shed the light of his work with as little shade as possible, and perhaps it may be that what they find fault with may be moles, that sometimes heighten the beauty of the face that bears them, and so I say very great is the risk to which he who prints a book exposes himself, for of all impossibilities the greatest is to write one that will satisfy and please all readers." "That which treats of me must have pleased few," said Don Quixote. "Quite the contrary," said the bachelor, "for, as stultorum infinitum est numerus, innumerable are those who have relished the said history, but some have brought a charge against the author's memory, inasmuch as he forgot to say who the thief was who stole Sancho's dapple, for it is not stated there, but only to be inferred from what is set down, that he was stolen, and a little farther on we see Sancho mounted on the same ass, without any reappearance of it. They say, too, that he forgot to state what Sancho did with those 100 crowns that he found in the valise in the Sierra Morena, as he never alludes to them again, and there are many who would be glad to know what he did with them, or what he spent them on, for it is one of the serious omissions of the work." "Señor Samson, I am not in a humor now for going into accounts or explanations," said Sancho, "for there's a sinking of the stomach come over me, and unless I doctor it with a couple of sups of the old stuff it will put me on the thorn of Santa Lucia. I have it at home, and my old woman is waiting for me. After dinner I'll come back, and will answer you and all the world every question you may choose to ask, as well about the loss of the ass as about the spending of the 100 crowns," and without another word or waiting for a reply he made off home. Don Quixote begged and entreated the bachelor to stay and do penance with him. The bachelor accepted the invitation and remained. A couple of young pigeons were added to the ordinary fare. At dinner they talked chivalry. Carrasco fell in with his host's humor. The banquet came to an end. They took their afternoon sleep. Sancho returned, and their conversation was resumed. Chapter 4. In which Sancho Panza gives a satisfactory reply to the doubts and questions of the bachelor Samson Carrasco, together with other matters worth knowing and telling. Sancho came back to Don Quixote's house, and returning to the late subject of conversation, he said, as to what Señor Samson said, that he would like to know by whom, or how, or when my ass was stolen, I say in reply that the same night we went into the Sierra Morena, flying from the Holy Brotherhood after that unlucky adventure of the galley slaves, and the other of the corpse that was going to Segovia, my master and I ensconced ourselves in a thicket, and there, my master leaning on his lance, and I seated on my dapple, battered and weary with the late frays, we fell asleep as if it had been on four feather mattresses, and I in particular slept so sound, that, whoever he was able to come and prop me up on four stakes, which he put under the four corners of the pack saddle in such a way that he left me mounted on it, and took away dapple from under me without my feeling it. That is an easy matter, said Don Quixote, and it is no new occurrence, for the same thing happened to Sacri Ponte at the siege of Albracca. The famous thief, Brunello, by the same contrivance, took his horse from between his legs. Day came, continued Sancho, and the moment I stirred the stakes gave way and I fell to the ground with a mighty come down. I looked about for the ass, but could not see him, the tears rushed to my eyes and I raised such a lamentation that, if the author of our history has not put it in, he may depend upon it he has left out a good thing. Some days after, I know not how many, traveling with her ladyship the princess my Micomicona, I saw my ass, and mounted upon him, in the dress of a gypsy, was that Inez de Pasamonte, the great rogue and rascal that my master and I freed from the chain. That is not where the mistake is, replied Samson, it is, that before the ass has turned up, the author speaks of Sancho as being mounted on it. I don't know what to say to that, said Sancho, unless that the historian made a mistake, or perhaps it might be a blunder of the printer's. No doubt that's it, said Samson, but what became of the 100 crowns? Did they vanish? To which Sancho answered, I spent them for my own good, and my wife's, and my children's, and it is they that have made my wife bear so patiently all my wanderings on highways and byways, in the service of my master, Don Quixote. For if after all this time I had come back to the house without a rap and without the ass, it would have been a poor lookout for me, and if anyone wants to know anything more about me, here I am, ready to answer the king himself in person, and it is no affair of anyone's whether I took or did not take, whether I spent or did not spend, for the whacks that were given me in these journeys were to be paid for in money, even if they were valued at no more than 4 maravedis apiece, another 100 crowns would not pay me for half of them. Let each look to himself and not try to make out white black, and black white, for each of us is as God made him, aye, and often worse. I will take care, said Carrasco, to impress upon the author of the history that, if he prints it again, he must not forget what worthy Sancho has said, for it will raise it a good span higher. Is there anything else to correct in the history, Señor Bachelor? Asked Don Quixote. No doubt there is, replied he, but not anything that will be of the same importance as those I have mentioned. Does the author promise a second part at all? Said Don Quixote. He does promise one, replied Samson, but he says he has not found it, nor does he know who has got it, and we cannot say whether it will appear or not, and so, on that head, as some say that no second part has ever been good, and others that enough has been already written about Don Quixote, it is thought there will be no second part, though some, who are jovial rather than saturnine, say, let us have more quixotades, let Don Quixote charge and Sancho chatter, and no matter what it may turn out, we shall be satisfied with that. And what does the author mean to do? Said Don Quixote. What? Replied Samson, why, as soon as he has found the history which he is now searching for with extraordinary diligence, he will at once give it to the press, moved more by the profit that may accrue to him from doing so than by any thought of praise. Whereat Sancho observed, the author looks for money and profit, does he? It will be a wonder if he succeeds, for it will be only hurry, hurry, with him, like the tailor on Easter Eve, and works done in a hurry are never finished as perfectly as they ought to be. Let Master Moore, or whatever he is, pay attention to what he is doing, and I and my master will give him as much grouting ready to his hand, in the way of adventures and accidents of all sorts, as would make up not only one second part, but 100. The good man fancies, no doubt, that we are fast asleep in the straw here, but let him hold up our feet to be shod and he will see which foot it is we go lame on. All I say is, that if my master would take my advice, we would be now afield, redressing outrages and righting wrongs, as is the use and custom of good knights errant." Sancho had hardly uttered these words when the neighing of Rocinante fell upon their ears, which neighing Don Quixote accepted as a happy omen, and he resolved to make another sally in 3 or 4 days from that time. Announcing his intention to the bachelor, he asked his advice as to the quarter in which he ought to commence his expedition, and the bachelor replied that in his opinion he ought to go to the kingdom of Aragon, and the city of Saragossa, where there were to be certain solemn joustings at the festival of Saint George, at which he might win renown above all the knights of Aragon, which would be winning it above all the knights of the world. He commended his very praiseworthy and gallant resolution, but admonished him to proceed with greater caution in encountering dangers, because his life did not belong to him, but to all those who had need of him to protect and aid them in their misfortunes. "There's where it is, what I abominate, Señor Samson," said Sancho here. "My master will attack 100 armed men as a greedy boy would 6 melons. Body of the world, Señor Bachelor. There is a time to attack and a time to retreat, and it is not to be always Santiago, and close Spain. Moreover, I have heard it said, and I think by my master himself, if I remember rightly, that the mean of valor lies between the extremes of cowardice and rashness, and if that be so, I don't want him to fly without having good reason, or to attack when the odds make it better not. But, above all things, I warn my master that if he is to take me with him it must be on the condition that he is to do all the fighting, and that I am not to be called upon to do anything except what concerns keeping him clean and comfortable. In this I will dance attendance on him readily, but to expect me to draw sword, even against rascally churls of the hatchet and hood, is idle. I don't set up to be a fighting man, Señor Samson, but only the best and most loyal squire that ever served knight-errant, and if my master Don Quixote, in consideration of my many faithful services, is pleased to give me some island of the many his worship says one may stumble on in these parts, I will take it as a great favor, and if he does not give it to me, I was born like everyone else, and a man must not live in dependence on anyone except God, and what is more, my bread will taste as well, and perhaps even better, without a government than if I were a governor, and how do I know but that in these governments the devil may have prepared some trick for me, to make me lose my footing and fall and knock my grinders out. Sancho I was born and Sancho the first mean to die. But for all that, if heaven were to make me a fair offer of an island or something else of the kind, without much trouble and without much risk, I am not such a fool as to refuse it, for they say, too, when they offer thee a heifer, run with a halter, and when good luck comes to thee, take it in." "Brother Sancho," said Carrasco, "you have spoken like a professor, but, for all that, put your trust in God and in Señor Don Quixote, for he will give you a kingdom, not to say an island." "It is all the same, be it more or be it less," replied Sancho, "though I can tell Señor Carrasco that my master would not throw the kingdom he might give me into a sack all in holes, for I have felt my own pulse and I find myself sound enough to rule kingdoms and govern islands, and I have before now told my master as much." "Take care, Sancho," said Samson, "honors change manners, and perhaps when you find yourself a governor you won't know the mother that bore you." "That may hold good of those that are born in the ditches," said Sancho, "not of those who have the fat of an old Christian 4 fingers deep on their souls, as I have. Nay, only look at my disposition, is that likely to show ingratitude to anyone?" "God grant it," said Don Quixote, "we shall see when the government comes, and I seem to see it already." He then begged the bachelor, if he were a poet, to do him the favor of composing some verses for him conveying the farewell he meant to take of his lady Dulcinea del Toboso, and to see that a letter of her name was placed at the beginning of each line, so that, at the end of the verses, Dulcinea del Toboso might be read by putting together the first letters. The bachelor replied that although he was not one of the famous poets of Spain, who were, they said, only 3½, he would not fail to compose the required verses, though he saw a great difficulty in the task, as the letters which made up the name were 17, so, if he made 4 ballad stanzas of 4 lines each, there would be a letter over, and if he made them of 5, what they called decimas or redondillas, there were 3 letters short. Nevertheless he would try to drop a letter as well as he could, so that the name Dulcinea del Toboso might be got into 4 ballad stanzas. "It must be, by some means or other," said Don Quixote, "for unless the name stands there plain and manifest, no woman would believe the verses were made for her." They agreed upon this, and that the departure should take place in 3 days from that time. Don Quixote charged the bachelor to keep it a secret, especially from the curate and Master Nicholas, and from his niece and the housekeeper, lest they should prevent the execution of his praiseworthy and valiant purpose. Carrasco promised all, and then took his leave, charging Don Quixote to inform him of his good or evil fortunes whenever he had an opportunity, and thus they bade each other farewell, and Sancho went away to make the necessary preparations for their expedition. Chapter 5. Of the shrewd and droll conversation that passed between Sancho Panza and his wife Teresa Panza, and other matters worthy of being duly recorded. The translator of this history, when he comes to write this fifth chapter, says that he considers it apocryphal, because in it Sancho Panza speaks in a style unlike that which might have been expected from his limited intelligence, and says things so subtle that he does not think it possible he could have conceived them. However, desirous of doing what his task imposed upon him, he was unwilling to leave it untranslated, and therefore he went on to say. Sancho came home in such glee and spirits that his wife noticed his happiness a bow shot off, so much so that it made her ask him, "What have you got, Sancho friend, that you are so glad?" To which he replied, "Wife, if it were God's will, I should be very glad not to be so well pleased as I show myself." "I don't understand you, husband," said she, "and I don't know what you mean by saying you would be glad, if it were God's will, not to be well pleased, for, fool as I am, I don't know how one can find pleasure in not having it." "Hark ye, Teresa," replied Sancho, "I am glad because I have made up my mind to go back to the service of my master Don Quixote, who means to go out a third time to seek for adventures, and I am going with him again, for my necessities will have it so, and also the hope that cheers me with the thought that I may find another 100 crowns like those we have spent, though it makes me sad to have to leave thee and the children, and if God would be pleased to let me have my daily bread, dry shot and at home, without taking me out into the byways and crossroads, and he could do it at small cost by merely willing it, it is clear my happiness would be more solid and lasting, for the happiness I have is mingled with sorrow at leaving thee, so that I was right in saying I would be glad, if it were God's will, not to be well pleased." "Look here, Sancho," said Teresa, "ever since you joined on to a knight-errant you talk in such a roundabout way that there is no understanding you." "It is enough that God understands me, wife," replied Sancho, "for he is the understander of all things, that will do, but mind, sister, you must look to Dapple carefully for the next 3 days, so that he may be fit to take arms, double his feed, and see to the pack saddle and other harness, for it is not to a wedding we are bound, but to go round the world, and play at give and take with giants and dragons and monsters, and hear hissings and roarings and bellowings and howlings, and even all this would be lavender, if we had not to reckon with Yangzans and enchanted Moors." "I know well enough, husband," said Teresa, "that squires errant don't eat their bread for nothing, and so I will be always praying to our Lord to deliver you speedily from all that hard fortune." "I can tell you, wife," said Sancho, "if I did not expect to see myself governor of an island before long, I would drop down dead on the spot." "Nay, then, husband," said Teresa, "let the hen live, though it be with her pip, live, and let the devil take all the governments in the world. You came out of your mother's womb without a government, you have lived until now without a government, and when it is God's will you will go, or be carried, to your grave without a government. How many there are in the world who live without a government, and continue to live all the same, and are reckoned in the number of the people? The best sauce in the world is hunger, and as the poor are never without that, they always eat with a relish. But mind, Sancho, if by good luck you should find yourself with some government, don't forget me and your children. Remember that Sanchico is now full 15, and it is right he should go to school, if his uncle the abbot has a mind to have him trained for the church. Consider, too, that your daughter Mari Sancha will not die of grief if we marry her, for I have my suspicions that she is as eager to get a husband as you to get a government, and, after all, a daughter looks better ill-married than well-whored." "By my faith," replied Sancho, "if God brings me to get any sort of a government, I intend, wife, to make such a high match for Mari Sancha that there will be no approaching her without calling her my lady." "Nay, Sancho," returned Teresa, "marry her to her equal, that is the safest plan, for if you put her out of wooden clogs into high-heeled shoes, out of her gray flannel petticoat into hoops and silk gowns, out of the plain Marica and thou, into Doña so-and-so and my lady, the girl won't know where she is, and at every turn she will fall into 1,000 blunders that will show the thread of her coarse homespun stuff." "Tut, you fool," said Sancho, "it will be only to practice it for 2 or 3 years, and then dignity and decorum will fit her as easily as a glove, and if not, what matter? Let her be my lady, and never mind what happens." "Keep to your own station, Sancho," replied Teresa, don't try to raise yourself higher, and bear in mind the proverb that says, wipe the nose of your neighbor's son, and take him into your house. A fine thing it would be, indeed, to marry our Maria to some great count or grand gentleman, who, when the humor took him, would abuse her and call her clown bread and clodhopper's daughter and spinning wench. I have not been bringing up my daughter for that all this time, I can tell you, husband. Do you bring home money, Sancho, and leave marrying her to my care? There is Lococho, Juan Tocho's son, a stout, sturdy young fellow that we know, and I can see he does not look sour at the girl, and with him, one of our own sort, she will be well married, and we shall have her always under our eyes, and be all one family, parents and children, grandchildren and sons-in-law, and the peace and blessing of God will dwell among us, so don't you go marrying her in those courts and grand palaces where they won't know what to make of her, or she what to make of herself. Why, you idiot and wife for Barabbas, said Sancho, what do you mean by trying, without why or wherefore, to keep me from marrying my daughter to one who'll give me grandchildren that will be called your lordship? Look ye, Teresa, I have always heard my elders say that he who does not know how to take advantage of luck when it comes to him, has no right to complain if it gives him the goby, and now that it is knocking at our door, it will not do to shut it out, let us go with the favoring breeze that blows upon us. It is this sort of talk, and what Sancho says lower down, that made the translator of the history say he considered this chapter apocryphal. Don't you see, you animal, continued Sancho, that it will be well for me to drop into some profitable government that will lift us out of the mire, and marry Mari Sancha to whom I like, and you yourself will find yourself called Doña Teresa Panza, and sitting in church on a fine carpet and cushions and draperies, in spite and in defiance of all the born ladies of the town? No, stay as you are, growing neither greater nor less, like a tapestry figure, let us say no more about it, for Sancha shall be a countess, say what you will. Are you sure of all you say, husband? Replied Teresa. Well, for all that, I am afraid this rank of countess for my daughter will be her ruin. You do as you like, make a duchess or a princess of her, but I can tell you it will not be with my will and consent. I was always a lover of equality, brother, and I can't bear to see people give themselves airs without any right. They called me Teresa at my baptism, a plain, simple name, without any additions or tags or fringes of Dons or Donas. Cascadro was my father's name, and as I am your wife, I am called Teresa Panza, though by right I ought to be called Teresa Cascadro, but kings go where laws like, and I am content with this name without having the Don put on top of it to make it so heavy that I cannot carry it, and I don't want to make people talk about me when they see me go dressed like a countess or governor's wife, for they will say at once, see what airs the slut gives herself. Only yesterday she was always spinning flax, and used to go to mass with the tail of her petticoat over her head instead of a mantle, and there she goes today in a hooped gown with her brooches and airs, as if we didn't know her. If God keeps me in my seven senses, or five, or whatever number I have, I am not going to bring myself to such a pass. Go you, brother, and be a government or an island man, and swagger as much as you like, for by the soul of my mother, neither my daughter nor I are going to stir a step from our village. A respectable woman should have a broken leg and keep at home, and to be busy at something is a virtuous damsel's holiday. Be off to your adventures along with your Don Quixote, and leave us to our misadventures, for God will mend them for us according as we deserve it. I don't know, I'm sure, who fixed the Don to him, what neither his father nor grandfather ever had. I declare thou hast a devil of some sort in thy body, said Sancho. God help thee, what a lot of things thou hast strung together, one after the other, without head or tail. What have Cascadro, and the brooches and the proverbs and the airs, to do with what I say? Look here, fool and old, for so I may call you, when you don't understand my words, and run away from good fortune, if I had said that my daughter was to throw herself down from a tower, or go roaming the world, as the Infanta Doña Urraca wanted to do, you would be right in not giving way to my will, but if in an instant, in less than the twinkling of an eye, I put the Don and my lady on her back, and take her out of the stubble, and place her under a canopy, on a dais, and on a couch, with more velvet cushions than all the Amahades of Morocco ever had in their family, why won't you consent and fall in with my wishes? Do you know why, husband? Replied Teresa, because of the proverb that says who covers thee, discovers thee. At the poor man people only throw a hasty glance, on the rich man they fix their eyes, and if the said rich man was once on a time poor, it is then there is the sneering and the tattle in spite of backbiters, and in the streets here they swarm as thick as bees. Look here, Teresa, said Sancho, and listen to what I am now going to say to you, maybe you never heard it in all your life, and I do not give my own notions, for what I am about to say are the opinions of His Reverence the Preacher, who preached in this town last Lent, and who said, if I remember rightly, that all things present that our eyes behold, bring themselves before us, and remain and fix themselves on our memory much better and more forcibly than things past. These observations which Sancho makes here are the other ones on account of which the translator says he regards this chapter as apocryphal, inasmuch as they are beyond Sancho's capacity. Whence it arises, he continued, that when we see any person well dressed and making a figure with rich garments and retinue of servants, it seems to lead and impel us perforce to respect him, though memory may at the same moment recall to us some lowly condition in which we have seen him, but which, whether it may have been poverty or low birth, being now a thing of the past, has no existence, while the only thing that has any existence is what we see before us, and if this person whom fortune has raised from his original lowly state, these were the very words the padre used, to his present height of prosperity, be well bred, generous, courteous to all, without seeking to vie with those whose nobility is of ancient date, depend upon it, Teresa, no one will remember what he was, and everyone will respect what he is, except indeed the envious, from whom no fair fortune is safe. I do not understand you, husband, replied Teresa, do as you like, and don't break my head with any more speechifying and rhetoric, and if you have revolved to do what you say. Resolved, you should say, woman, said Sancho, not revolved. Don't set yourself to wrangle with me, husband, said Teresa, I speak as God pleases, and don't deal in out-of-the-way phrases, and I say if you are bent upon having a government, take your son Sancho with you, and teach him from this time on how to hold a government, for sons ought to inherit and learn the trades of their fathers. As soon as I have the government, said Sancho, I will send for him by post, and I will send thee money, of which I shall have no lack, for there is never any one of people to lend it to governors when they have not got it, and do thou dress him so as to hide what he is and make him look what he is to be. You send the money, said Teresa, and I'll dress him up for you as fine as you please. Then we are agreed that our daughter is to be a countess, said Sancho. The day that I see her a countess, replied Teresa, it will be the same to me as if I was burying her, but once more I say do as you please, for we women are born to this burden of being obedient to our husbands, though they be dogs, and with this she began to weep in earnest, as if she already saw Sanquica dead and buried. Sancho consoled her by saying that though he must make her a countess, he would put it off as long as possible. Here their conversation came to an end, and Sancho went back to see Don Quixote, and make arrangements for their departure. Chapter 6. Of what took place between Don Quixote and his niece and housekeeper, one of the most important chapters in the whole history. While Sancho Panza and his wife, Teresa Cascajo, held the above irrelevant conversation, Don Quixote's niece and housekeeper were not idle, for by a thousand signs they began to perceive that their uncle and master meant to give them the slip a third time, and once more betake himself to his, for them, ill-errant chivalry. They strove by all the means in their power to divert him from such an unlucky scheme, but it was all preaching in the desert and hammering cold iron. Nevertheless, among many other representations made to him, the housekeeper said to him, in truth, master, if you do not keep still and stay quiet at home, and give over roaming mountains and valleys like a troubled spirit, looking for what they say are called adventures, but what I call misfortunes, I shall have to make complaint to God and the king with loud supplication to send some remedy. To which Don Quixote replied, what answer God will give to your complaints, housekeeper, I know not, nor what his majesty will answer either, I only know that if I were king I should decline to answer the numberless silly petitions they present every day, for one of the greatest among the many troubles kings have is being obliged to listen to all and answer all, and therefore I should be sorry that any affairs of mine should worry him. Whereupon the housekeeper said, tell us, senor, at his majesty's court are there no knights? There are, replied Don Quixote, and plenty of them, and it is right there should be, to set off the dignity of the prince, and for the greater glory of the king's majesty. Then might not your worship, said she, be one of those that, without stirring a step, serve their king and lord in his court? Recollect, my friend, said Don Quixote, all knights cannot be courtiers, nor can all courtiers be knights errant, nor need they be. There must be all sorts in the world, and though we may be all knights, there is a great difference between one and another, for the courtiers, without quitting their chambers, or the threshold of the court, range the world over by looking at a map, without its costing them a farthing, and without suffering heat or cold, hunger or thirst, but we, the true knights errant, measure the whole earth with our own feet, exposed to the sun, to the cold, to the air, to the inclemencies of heaven, by day and night, on foot and on horseback, nor do we only know enemies in pictures, but in their own real shapes, and that all risks and on all occasions we attack them, without any regard to childish points or rules of single combat, whether one has or has not a short or lance or sword, whether one carries relics or any secret contrivance about him, whether or not the sun is to be divided and portioned out, and other niceties of the sort that are observed in set combats of man to man, that you know nothing about, but I do. And you must know besides, that the true knight-errant, though he may see 10 giants, that not only touch the clouds with their heads but pierce them, and that go, each of them, on 2 tall towers by way of legs, and whose arms are like the masts of mighty ships, and each eye like a great mill-wheel, and glowing brighter than a glass furnace, must not on any account be dismayed by them. On the contrary, he must attack and fall upon them with a gallant bearing and a fearless heart, and, if possible, vanquish and destroy them, even though they have for armor the shells of a certain fish, that they say are harder than diamonds, and in place of swords wield trenchant blades of Damascus steel, or clubs studded with spikes also of steel, such as I have more than once seen. All this I say, housekeeper, that you may see the difference there is between the one sort of knight and the other, and it would be well if there were no prince who did not set a higher value on this second, or more properly speaking first, kind of knights errant, for, as we read in their histories, there have been some among them who have been the salvation, not merely of one kingdom, but of many. Ah, senor, here exclaimed the niece, remember that all this you are saying about knights errant is fable and fiction, and their histories, if indeed they were not burned, would deserve, each of them, to have a San Benito put on it, or some mark by which it might be known as infamous and the corrupter of good manners. By the God that gives me life, said Don Quixote, if thou wert not my full niece, being daughter of my own sister, I would inflict a chastisement upon thee for the blasphemy thou hast uttered that all the world should ring with. What? Can it be that a young hussy that hardly knows how to handle a dozen lace bobbins dares to wag her tongue and criticize the histories of knights errant? What would Señor Amadís say if he heard of such a thing? He, however, no doubt would forgive thee, for he was the most humble-minded and courteous knight of his time, and moreover a great protector of damsels. But some there are that might have heard thee, and it would not have been well for thee in that case, for they are not all courteous or mannerly, some are ill-conditioned scoundrels, nor is it everyone that calls himself a gentleman, that is so in all respects, some are gold, others pinchbeck, and all look like gentlemen, but not all can stand the touchstone of truth. There are men of low rank who strain themselves to bursting to pass for gentlemen, and high gentlemen who, one would fancy, were dying to pass for men of low rank. The former raise themselves by their ambition or by their virtues, the latter debase themselves by their lack of spirit or by their vices, and one has need of experience and discernment to distinguish these two kinds of gentlemen, so much like in name and so different in conduct. God bless me, said the niece, that you should know so much, uncle, enough, if need be, to get up into a pulpit and go preach in the streets, and yet that you should fall into a delusion so great and a folly so manifest as to try to make yourself out vigorous when you are old, strong when you are sickly, able to put straight what is crooked when you yourself are bent by age, and, above all, a caballero when you are not one, for though gentlefolk may be so, poor men are nothing of the kind. There is a great deal of truth in what you say, niece, returned Don Quixote, and I could tell you somewhat about birth that would astonish you, but, not to mix up things human and divine, I refrain. Look you, my dears, all the lineages in the world, attend to what I am saying, can be reduced to 4 sorts, which are these: those that at humble beginnings, and when on spreading and extending themselves until they attain surpassing greatness, those that at great beginnings and maintain them, and still maintain and uphold the greatness of their origin, those, again, that from a great beginning have ended in a point like a pyramid, having reduced and lessened their original greatness till it has come to naught, like the point of a pyramid, which, relatively to its base or foundation, is nothing. And then there are those, and it is they that are the most numerous, that have had neither an illustrious beginning nor a remarkable mid-course, and so will have an end without a name, like an ordinary plebeian line. Of the first, those that had an humble origin and rose to the greatness they still preserve, the Ottoman house may serve as an example, which from an humble and lowly shepherd, its founder, has reached the height at which we now see it. For examples of the second sort of lineage, that began with greatness and maintains it still without adding to it, there are the many princes who have inherited the dignity, and maintain themselves in their inheritance, without increasing or diminishing it, keeping peacefully within the limits of their states. Of those that began great and ended in a point, there are thousands of examples, for all the pharaohs and Ptolemies of Egypt, the Caesars of Rome, and the whole herd, if I may apply such a word to them, of countless princes, monarchs, lords, Medes, Assyrians, Persians, Greeks, and barbarians, all these lineages and lordships have ended in a point and come to nothing, they themselves as well as their founders, for it would be impossible now to find one of their descendants, and, even should we find one, it would be in some lowly and humble condition. Of plebeian lineages I have nothing to say, save that they merely serve to swell the number of those that live, without any eminence to entitle them to any fame or praise beyond this. From all I have said I would have you gather, my poor innocents, that great is the confusion among lineages, and that only those are seen to be great and illustrious that show themselves so by the virtue, wealth, and generosity of their possessors. I have said virtue, wealth, and generosity, because a great man who is vicious will be a great example of vice, and a rich man who is not generous will be merely a miserly beggar, for the possessor of wealth is not made happy by possessing it, but by spending it, and not by spending as he pleases, but by knowing how to spend it well. The poor gentleman has no way of showing that he is a gentleman but by virtue, by being affable, well-bred, courteous, gentle-mannered, and kindly, not haughty, arrogant, or censorious, but above all by being charitable, for by 2 maravedis given with a cheerful heart to the poor, he will show himself as generous as he who distributes alms with bell-ringing, and no one that perceives him to be endowed with the virtues I have named, even though he know him not, will fail to recognize and set him down as one of good blood, and it would be strange were it not so. Praise has ever been the reward of virtue, and those who are virtuous cannot fail to receive commendation. There are 2 roads, my daughters, by which men may reach wealth and honors, one is that of letters, the other that of arms. I have more of arms than of letters in my composition, and, judging by my inclination to arms, was born under the influence of the planet Mars. I am, therefore, in a measure constrained to follow that road, and by it I must travel in spite of all the world, and it will be labor in vain for you to urge me to resist what heaven wills, fate ordains, reason requires, and, above all, my own inclination favors, for knowing as I do the countless toils that are the accompaniments of knight-errantry, I know, too, the infinite blessings that are attained by it. I know that the path of virtue is very narrow, and the road of vice broad and spacious. I know their ends and goals are different, for the broad and easy road of vice ends in death, and the narrow and toilsome one of virtue in life, and not transitory life, but in that which has no end. I know, as our great Castilian poet says, that it is by rugged paths like these they go that scale the heights of immortality, unreached by those that falter here below. Woe is me! Exclaimed Anise, my lord is a poet, too. He knows everything, and he can do everything. I will bet, if he chose to turn mason, he could make a house as easily as a cage. I can tell you, Anise, replied Don Quixote, if these chivalrous thoughts did not engage all my faculties, there would be nothing that I could not do, nor any sort of knick-knack that would not come from my hands, particularly cages and toothpicks. At this moment there came a knocking at the door, and when they asked who was there, Sancho Panza made answer that it was he. The instant the housekeeper knew who it was, she ran to hide herself so as not to see him, in such abhorrence did she hold him. The niece let him in, and his master Don Quixote came forward to receive him with open arms, and the pair shut themselves up in his room, where they had another conversation not inferior to the previous one. Chapter 7. Of what passed between Don Quixote and his squire, together with other very notable incidents. The instant the housekeeper saw Sancho Panza shut himself in with her master, she guessed what they were about, and suspecting that the result of the consultation would be a resolve to undertake a third sally, she seized her mantle, and in deep anxiety and distress, ran to find the bachelor Samson Carrasco, as she thought that, being a well-spoken man, and a new friend of her master's, he might be able to persuade him to give up any such crazy notion. She found him pacing the patio of his house, and, perspiring and flurried, she fell at his feet the moment she saw him. Carrasco, seeing how distressed and overcome she was, said to her, "What is this, mistress housekeeper? What has happened to you? One would think you heartbroken." "Nothing, Señor Samson," said she, "only that my master is breaking out, plainly breaking out." "Whereabouts is he breaking out, Señora?" asked Samson. "Has any part of his body burst?" "He is only breaking out at the door of his madness," she replied. "I mean, dear Señor Bachelor, that he is going to break out again, and this will be the third time, to hunt all over the world for what he calls ventures, though I can't make out why he gives them that name. The first time he was brought back to us slung across the back of an ass, and belabored all over, and the second time he came in an ox cart, shut up in a cage, in which he persuaded himself he was enchanted, and the poor creature was in such a state that the mother that bore him would not have known him, lean, yellow, with his eyes sunk deep in the cells of his skull, so that to bring him round again, ever so little, cost me more than 600 eggs, as God knows, and all the world, and my hens too, that won't let me tell a lie.
That I can well believe, replied the bachelor, for they are so good and so fat, and so well bred, that they would not say one thing for another, though they were to burst for it.
In short then, mistress housekeeper, that is all, and there is nothing the matter, except what it is feared Don Quixote may do?
No, senor, said she.
Well then, returned the bachelor, don't be uneasy, but go home in peace, get me ready something hot for breakfast, and while you are on the way say the prayer of Santa Apollonia, that is if you know it, for I will come presently and you will see miracles.
Woe is me, cried the housekeeper, is it the prayer of Santa Apollonia you would have me say?
That would do if it was the toothache my master had, but it is in the brains, what he has got.
I know what I am saying, mistress housekeeper, go, and don't set yourself to argue with me, for you know I am a bachelor of Salamanca, and one can't be more of a bachelor than that, replied Carrasco, and with this the housekeeper retired, and the bachelor went to look for the curate, and arrange with him what will be told in its proper place.
While Don Quixote and Sancho were shut up together, they had a discussion which the history records with great precision and scrupulous exactness. Sancho said to his master, Señor, I have induced my wife to let me go with your worship wherever you choose to take me.
Induced, you should say, Sancho, said Don Quixote, not adduced.
Once or twice, as well as I remember, replied Sancho, I have begged of your worship not to mend my words, if so be as you understand what I mean by them, and if you don't understand them to say Sancho, or devil, I don't understand thee, and if I don't make my meaning plain, then you may correct me, for I am so facile.
I don't understand thee, Sancho, said Don Quixote at once, for I know not what I am so facile means.
So facile means I am so much that way, replied Sancho.
I understand thee still less now, said Don Quixote.
Well, if you can't understand me, said Sancho, I don't know how to put it, I know no more, God help me.
Oh, now I have hit it, said Don Quixote, thou wouldst say thou art so docile, tractable, and gentle that thou wilt take what I say to thee, and submit to what I teach thee.
I would bet, said Sancho, that from the very first you understood me, and knew what I meant, but you wanted to put me out that you might hear me make another couple of dozen blunders.
Maybe so, replied Don Quixote, but to come to the point, what does Teresa say?
Teresa says, replied Sancho, that I should make sure with your worship, and let papers speak and beards be still, for he who binds does not wrangle, since one take is better than two I'll give these, and I say a woman's advice is no great thing, and he who won't take it is a fool.
And so say I, said Don Quixote.
Continue, Sancho my friend, go on, you talk pearls today.
The fact is, continued Sancho, that, as your worship knows better than I do, we are all of us liable to death, and today we are, and tomorrow we are not, and the lamb goes as soon as the sheep, and nobody can promise himself more hours of life in this world than God may be pleased to give him, for death is death, and when it comes to knock at our life's door, it is always urgent, and neither prayers, nor struggles, nor scepters, nor mitres, can keep it back, as common talk and reports say, and as they tell us from the pulpits every day.
All that is very true, said Don Quixote, but I cannot make out what thou art driving at.
What I am driving at, said Sancho, is that your worship settle some fixed wages for me, to be paid monthly while I am in your service, and that the same be paid me out of your estate, for I don't care to stand on rewards which either come late, or ill, or never at all, God help me with my own. In short, I would like to know what I am to get, be it much or little, for the hen will lay on one egg, and many littles make a much, and so long as one gains something there is nothing lost. To be sure, if it should happen, what I neither believe nor expect, that your worship were to give me that island you have promised me, I am not so ungrateful nor so grasping but that I would be willing to have the revenue of such island valued and stopped out of my wages and due promotion.
Sancho, my friend, replied Don Quixote, sometimes proportion may be as good as promotion.
I see, said Sancho, I'll bet I ought to have said proportion, and not promotion, but it is no matter, as your worship has understood me.
And so well understood, returned Don Quixote, that I have seen into the depths of thy thoughts, and know the mark thou art shooting at with the countless shafts of thy proverbs.
Look here, Sancho, I would readily fix thy wages if I had ever found any instance in the histories of the knights errant to show or indicate, by the slightest hint, what their squires used to get monthly or yearly, but I have read all or the best part of their histories, and I cannot remember reading of any knight errant having assigned fixed wages to his squire,
I only know that they all served on reward, and that when they least expected it, if good luck attended their masters, they found themselves recompensed with an island or something equivalent to it, or at the least they were left with a title and lordship. If with these hopes and additional inducements you, Sancho, please to return to my service, well and good, but to suppose that I am going to disturb or unhinge the ancient usage of knight-errantry, is all nonsense. And so, my Sancho, get you back to your house and explain my intentions to your Teresa, and if she likes and you like to be on reward with me, beniquitum, if not, we remain friends, for if the pigeon house does not lack food, it will not lack pigeons, and bear in mind, my son, that a good hope is better than a bad holding, and a good grievance better than a bad compensation. I speak in this way, Sancho, to show you that I can shower down proverbs just as well as yourself, and in short, I mean to say, and I do say, that if you don't like to come on reward with me, and run the same chance that I run, God be with you and make a saint of you, for I shall find plenty of squires more obedient and painstaking, and not so thick-headed or talkative as you are. When Sancho heard his master's firm, resolute language, a cloud came over the sky with him and the wings of his heart drooped, for he had made sure that his master would not go without him for all the wealth of the world, and as he stood there dumbfounded and moody, Samson Carrasco came in with the housekeeper and niece, who were anxious to hear by what arguments he was about to dissuade their master from going to seek adventures. The archwag Samson came forward, and embracing him as he had done before, said with a loud voice, "O flower of knight-errantry! O shining light of arms! O honor and mirror of the Spanish nation! May God Almighty in his infinite power grant that any person or persons, who would impede or hinder thy third sally, may find no way out of the labyrinth of their schemes, nor ever accomplish what they most desire." And then, turning to the housekeeper, he said, "Mistress housekeeper may just as well give over saying the prayer of Santa Apollonia, for I know it is the positive determination of the spheres that Señor Don Quixote shall proceed to put into execution his new and lofty designs, and I should lay a heavy burden on my conscience did I not urge and persuade this knight not to keep the might of his strong arm and the virtue of his valiant spirit any longer curbed than checked, for by his inactivity he is defrauding the world of the redress of wrongs, of the protection of orphans, of the honor of virgins, of the aid of widows, and of the support of wives, and other matters of this kind appertaining, belonging, proper and peculiar to the order of knight-errantry. On, then, my lord Don Quixote, beautiful and brave, let your worship and highness set out today rather than tomorrow, and if anything be needed for the execution of your purpose, here am I ready in person and purse to supply the want, and were it requisite to attend your magnificence as squire, I should esteem it the happiest good fortune." At this, Don Quixote, turning to Sancho, said, "Did I not tell thee, Sancho, there would be squires enough and to spare for me? See now who offers to become one, no less than the illustrious bachelor Samson Carrasco, the perpetual joy and delight of the courts of the Salamancan schools, sound in body, discreet, patient under heat or cold, hunger or thirst, with all the qualifications requisite to make a knight-errant squire. But heaven forbid that, to gratify my own inclination, I should shake or shatter this pillar of letters and vessel of the sciences, and cut down this towering palm of the fair and liberal arts. Let this new Samson remain in his own country, and, bringing honor to it, bring honor at the same time on the gray heads of his venerable parents, for I will be content with any squire that comes to hand, as Sancho does not deign to accompany me." "I do deign," said Sancho, deeply moved and with tears in his eyes, "it shall not be said of me, master mine," he continued, "the bread eaten and the company dispersed. Nay, I come of no ungrateful stock, for all the world knows, but particularly my own town, who the Panzas from whom I am descended were, and, what is more, I know and have learned, by many good words and deeds, your worship's desire to show me favor, and if I have been bargaining more or less about my wages, it was only to please my wife, who, when she sets herself to press a point, no hammer drives the hoops of a cask as she drives one to do what she wants, but, after all, a man must be a man, and a woman, and as I am a man anyhow, which I can't deny, I will be one in my own house too, let who'll take it amiss, and so there's nothing more to do but for your worship to make your will with its codicil in such a way that it can't be provoked, and let us set out at once, to save Señor Samson's soul from suffering, as he says his conscience obliges him to persuade your worship to sally out upon the world a third time, so I offer again to serve your worship faithfully and loyally, as well and better than all the squires that served knights-errant in times past or present." The bachelor was filled with amazement when he heard Sancho's phraseology and style of talk, for though he had read the first part of his master's history he never thought that he could be so droll as he was there described, But now, hearing him talk of a will and codicil that could not be provoked, instead of will and codicil that could not be revoked, he believed all he had read of him, and set him down as one of the greatest simpletons of modern times, and he said to himself that two such lunatics as master and man the world had never seen. In fine, Don Quixote and Sancho embraced one another and made friends, and by the advice and with the approval of the great Carrasco, who was now their oracle, it was arranged that their departure should take place 3 days thence, by which time they could have all that was requisite for the journey ready, and procure a closed helmet, which Don Quixote said he must by all means take. Samson offered him one, as he knew a friend of his who had it would not refuse it to him, though it was more dingy with rust and mildew than bright and clean like burnished steel. The curses which both housekeeper and niece poured out on the bachelor were past counting. They tore their hair, they clawed their faces, and in the style of the hired mourners that were once in fashion, they raised a lamentation over the departure of their master and uncle, as if it had been his death. Samson's intention in persuading him to sally forth once more was to do what the history relates farther on, all by the advice of the curate and barber, with whom he had previously discussed the subject. Finally, then, during those 3 days, Don Quixote and Sancho provided themselves with what they considered necessary, and Sancho having pacified his wife, and Don Quixote his niece and housekeeper, at nightfall, unseen by anyone except the bachelor, who thought fit to accompany them half a league out of the village, they set out for El Toboso, Don Quixote on his good Rocinante and Sancho on his old Dapple, his alforges furnished with certain matters in the way of victuals, and his purse with money that Don Quixote gave him to meet emergencies. Samson embraced him, and entreated him to let him hear of his good or evil fortunes, so that he might rejoice over the former or condole with him over the latter, as the laws of friendship required. Don Quixote promised him he would do so, and Samson returned to the village, and the other two took the road for the great city of El Toboso. Chapter 8. Wherein is related what befell Don Quixote on his way to see his lady Dulcinea del Toboso. Blessed be Allah the All-Powerful, says Amete Benengeli on beginning this 8th chapter, blessed be Allah. He repeats 3 times, and he says he utters these thanksgivings at seeing that he has now got Don Quixote and Sancho fairly afield, and that the readers of his delightful history may reckon that the achievements and humors of Don Quixote and his squire are now about to begin, and he urges them to forget the former chivalries of the ingenious gentleman and to fix their eyes on those that are to come, which now begin on the road to El Toboso, as the others began on the plains of Montiel, nor is it much that he asks in consideration of all he promises, and so he goes on to say. Don Quixote and Sancho were left alone, and the moment Samson took his departure, Rocinante began to neigh, and Dapple to sigh, which, by both knight and squire, was accepted as a good sign and a very happy omen, though, if the truth is to be told, the sighs and brays of Dapple were louder than the neighings of the hack, from which Sancho inferred that his good fortune was to exceed and overtop that of his master, building, perhaps, upon some judicial astrology that he may have known, though the history says nothing about it. All that can be said is, that when he stumbled or fell, he was heard to say he wished he had not come out, for by stumbling or falling there was nothing to be got but a damaged shoe or a broken rib, and, fool as he was not much astray in this. Say Don Quixote, Sancho, my friend, night is drawing on upon us as we go, and more darkly than will allow us to reach El Toboso by daylight, for there I am resolved to go before I engage in another adventure, and there I shall obtain the blessing and generous permission of the peerless Dulcinea, with which permission I expect and feel assured that I shall conclude and bring to a happy termination every perilous adventure, for nothing in life makes knights errant more valorous than finding themselves favored by their ladies. So I believe, replied Sancho, but I think it will be difficult for your worship to speak with her or see her, at any rate where you will be able to receive her blessing, unless, indeed, she throws it over the wall of the yard where I saw her the time before, when I took her the letter that told of the follies and mad things your worship was doing in the heart of Sierra Morena. Didst thou take that for a yard wall, Sancho, said Don Quixote, were at which thou sawest that never sufficiently extolled grace and beauty? It must have been the gallery, corridor, or portico of some rich and royal palace. It might have been all that, returned Sancho, but to me it looked like a wall, unless I am short of memory. At all events, let us go there, Sancho, said Don Quixote, for, so that I see her, it is the same to me whether it be over a wall, or at a window, or through the chink of a door, or the grate of a garden, for any beam of the sun of her beauty that reaches my eyes will give light to my reason and strength to my heart, so that I shall be unmatched and unequaled in wisdom and valor. Well, to tell the truth, senor, said Sancho, when I saw that sun of the lady Dulcinea del Toboso, it was not bright enough to throw out beams at all, it must have been, that is her grace was sifting that wheat I told you of, the thick dust she raised came before her face like a cloud and dimmed it.
What? Dost thou still persist, Sancho, said Don Quixote, in saying, thinking, believing, and maintaining that my lady Dulcinea was sifting wheat, that being an occupation and task entirely at variance with what is and should be the employment of persons of distinction, who were constituted and reserved for other avocations and pursuits that show their rank a bowshot off. Thou hast forgotten, O Sancho, those lines of our poet wherein he paints for us how, in their crystal abodes, those four nymphs employed themselves who rose from their love togas and seated themselves in a verdant meadow to embroider those tissues which the ingenious poet there describes to us, how they were worked and woven with gold and silk and pearls, and something of this sort must have been the employment of my lady when thou sawest her, only that the spite which some wicked enchanter seems to have against everything of mine changes all those things that give me pleasure, and turns them into shapes unlike their own, and so I fear that in that history of my achievements which they say is now in print, if haply its author was some sage who is an enemy of mine, he will have put one thing for another, mingling a thousand lies with one truth, and amusing himself by relating transactions which have nothing to do with the sequence of a true history. O envy, root of all countless evils, and canker worm of the virtues? All the vices, Sancho, bring some kind of pleasure with them, but envy brings nothing but irritation, bitterness, and rage.
So I say too, replied Sancho. And I suspect in that legend or history of us that the bachelor Samson Carrasco told us he saw, my honor goes dragged in the dirt, knocked about, up and down, sweeping the streets, as they say. And yet, on the faith of an honest man, I never spoke ill of any enchanter, and I am not so well off that I am to be envied. To be sure, I am rather sly, and I have a certain spice of the rogue in me, but all is covered by the great cloak of my simplicity, always natural and never acted, and if I had no other merit save that I believe, as I always do, firmly and truly in God, and all the Holy Roman Catholic Church holds and believes, and that I am a mortal enemy of the Jews, the historians ought to have mercy on me and treat me well in their writings. But let them say what they like, naked was I born, naked I find myself, I neither lose nor gain, nay, while I see myself put into a book and passed on from hand to hand over the world, I don't care a fig, let them say what they like of me.
That, Sancho, returned Don Quixote, reminds me of what happened to a famous poet of our own day, who, having written a bitter satire against all the courtesan ladies, did not insert or name in it a certain lady of whom it was questionable whether she was one or not. She, seeing she was not in the list of the poet, asked him what he had seen in her that he did not include her in the number of the others, telling him he must add to his satire and put her in the new part, or else look out for the consequences. The poet did as she bade him, and left her without a shred of reputation, and she was satisfied by getting fame though it was infamy. In keeping with this is what they relate of that shepherd who set fire to the famous temple of Diana, by repute one of the seven wonders of the world, and burned it with the sole object of making his name live in after ages, and, though it was forbidden to name him, or mention his name by word of mouth or in writing, lest the object of his ambition should be attained, nevertheless it became known that he was called Erostratus. And something of the same sort is what happened in the case of the great Emperor Charles V and a gentleman in Rome. The emperor was anxious to see that famous temple of the Rotunda, called in ancient times the Temple of All the Gods, but nowadays, by a better nomenclature, of all the saints, which is the best preserved building of all those of pagan construction in Rome, and the one which best sustains the reputation of mighty works and magnificence of its founders. It is in the form of a half-orange, of enormous dimensions, and well-lighted, though no light penetrates it save that which is admitted by a window, or rather round skylight, at the top, and it was from this that the emperor examined the building. A Roman gentleman stood by his side and explained to him the skillful construction and ingenuity of the vast fabric and its wonderful architecture, and when they had left the skylight he said to the emperor, "A thousand times, your sacred majesty, the impulse came upon me to seize your majesty in my arms and fling myself down from yonder skylight, so as to leave behind me in the world a name that would last forever. I am thankful to you for not carrying such an evil thought into effect," said the emperor, "and I shall give you no opportunity in future of again putting your loyalty to the test, and I therefore forbid you ever to speak to me or to be where I am," and he followed up these words by bestowing a liberal bounty upon him. My meaning is, Sancho, that the desire of acquiring fame is a very powerful motive. What, thinkest thou? Was it that flung Horatius in full armor down from the bridge into the depths of the Tiber? What burned the hand and arm of Mutius? What impelled Gertius to plunge into the deep burning gulf that opened in the midst of Rome? What, in opposition to all the omens that declared against him, made Julius Caesar cross the Rubicon? And to come to more modern examples,
what scuttled the ships, and left stranded and cut off the gallant Spaniards under the command of the most courteous Cortes in the New World. All these and a variety of other great exploits are, were and will be, the work of fame that mortals desire as a reward and a portion of the immortality their famous deeds deserve, though we Catholic Christians and knights errant look more to that future glory that is everlasting in the ethereal regions of heaven than to the vanity of the fame that is to be acquired in this present transitory life, a fame that, however long it may last, must after all end with the world itself, which has its own appointed end. So that, O Sancho, in what we do we must not overpass the bounds which the Christian religion we profess has assigned to us. We have to slay pride in giants, envy by generosity and nobleness of heart, anger by calmness of demeanor and equanimity, gluttony and sloth by the spareness of our diet and the length of our vigils, lust and lewdness by the loyalty we preserve to those whom we have made the mistresses of our thoughts, indolence by traversing the world in all directions seeking opportunities of making ourselves, besides Christians, famous knights. Such, Sancho, are the means by which we reach those extremes of praise that fair fame carries with it. All that your worship has said so far, said Sancho, I have understood quite well, but still I would be glad if your worship would dissolve a doubt for me, which has just this minute come into my mind. Solve, thou meanest, Sancho, said Don Quixote, say on, in God's name, and I will answer as well as I can. Tell me, senor, Sancho went on to say, those Julys or Augusts, and all those venturous knights that you say are now dead, where are they now? The heathens, replied Don Quixote, are, no doubt, in hell. The Christians, if they were good Christians, are either in purgatory or in heaven. Very good, said Sancho, but now I want to know the tombs where the bodies of those great lords are. Have they silver lamps before them, or are the walls of their chapels ornamented with crutches, winding sheets, tresses of hair, legs and eyes in wax? Or what are they ornamented with? To which Don Quixote made answer, the tombs of the heathens were generally sumptuous temples. The ashes of Julius Caesar's body were placed on the top of a stone pyramid of vast size, which they now call in Rome St. Peter's Needle. The Emperor Hadrian had for a tomb a castle as large as a good-sized village, which they called the Mole Hadriani, and is now the castle of St. Angelo in Rome. The Queen Artemisia buried her husband Mausolus in a tomb which was reckoned one of the seven wonders of the world, but none of these tombs, or of the many others of the heathens, were ornamented with winding sheets or any of those other offerings and tokens that show that they who are buried there are saints. That's the point I'm coming to, said Sancho, and now tell me, which is the greater work, to bring a dead man to life or to kill a giant? The answer is easy, replied Don Quixote, it is a greater work to bring to life a dead man. Now I have got you, said Sancho, in that case the fame of them who bring the dead to life, who give sight to the blind, cure cripples, restore health to the sick, and before whose tombs there are lamps burning, and whose chapels are filled with devout folk on their knees adoring their relics, be a better fame in this life and in the other than that which all the heathen emperors and knights errant that have ever been in the world have left or may leave behind them. That I grant, too, said Don Quixote. Then this fame, these favors, these privileges, or whatever you call it, said Sancho, belong to the bodies and relics of the saints who, with the approbation and permission of our Holy Mother Church, have lamps, tapers, winding sheets, crutches, pictures, eyes and legs, by means of which they increase devotion and add to their own Christian reputation. Kings carry the bodies or relics of saints on their shoulders, and kiss bits of their bones, and enrich and adorn their oratories and favorite altars with them. What wouldst thou have me infer from all thou hast said, Sancho? Asked Don Quixote. My meaning is, said Sancho, let us set about becoming saints, and we shall obtain more quickly the fair fame we are striving after, for you know, senor, yesterday or the day before yesterday, for it is so lately one may say so, they canonized and beatified two little barefoot friars, and it is now reckoned the greatest good luck to kiss or touch the iron chains with which they gird and tortured their bodies, and they are held in greater veneration, so it is said, than the sword of Roland in the armory of our Lord the King, whom God preserve. So that, senor, it is better to be an humble little friar of no matter what order, than a valiant knight-errant, with God a couple of dozen of penance lashings are of more avail than 2,000 lance thrusts, be they given to giants, or monsters, or dragons. All that is true, returned Don Quixote, but we cannot all be friars, and many are the ways by which God takes his own to heaven. Chivalry is a religion, there are sainted knights in glory. Yes, said Sancho, but I have heard say that there are more friars in heaven than knights-errant. That, said Don Quixote, is because those in religious orders are more numerous than knights. The errant are many, said Sancho. Many, replied Don Quixote, but few they who deserve the name of knights. With these, and other discussions of the same sort, they passed that night and the following day, without anything worth mention happening to them, whereat Don Quixote was not a little dejected, but at length the next day, at daybreak, they descried the great city of El Toboso, at the sight of which Don Quixote's spirits rose and Sancho's fell, for he did not know Dulcinea's house, nor in all his life had he ever seen her, any more than his master, so that they were both uneasy, the one to see her, the other at not having seen her, and Sancho was at a loss to know what he was to do when his master sent him to El Toboso. In the end, Don Quixote made up his mind to enter the city at nightfall, and they waited until the time came among some oak trees that were near El Toboso, and when the moment they had agreed upon arrived, they made their entrance into the city, where something happened then that may fairly be called something. Chapter 9. Wherein is related what will be seen there. 'Twas at the very midnight hour more or less when Don Quixote and Sancho quitted the wood and entered El Toboso. The town was in deep silence, for all the inhabitants were asleep, and stretched on the broad of their backs, as the saying is. The night was darkish, though Sancho would have been glad had it been quite dark, so as to find in the darkness an excuse for his blundering. All over the place nothing was to be heard except the barking of dogs, which deafened the ears of Don Quixote and troubled the heart of Sancho. Now and then an ass brayed, pigs grunted, cats mewed, and the various noises they made seemed louder in the silence of the night, all which the enamored knight took to be of evil omen. Nevertheless he said to Sancho, "Sancho, my son, lead on to the palace of Dulcinea, it may be that we shall find her awake." "Body of the sun! What palace am I to lead to?" said Sancho, "when what I saw her highness in was only a very little house." "Most likely she had then withdrawn into some small apartment of her palace," said Don Quixote, "to amuse herself with damsels, as great ladies and princesses are accustomed to do." "Señor," said Sancho, "if your worship will have it in spite of me that the house of my lady Dulcinea is a palace, is this an hour, think you, to find the door open, and will it be right for us to go knocking till they hear us and open the door, making a disturbance and confusion all through the household? Are we going, do you fancy, to the house of our wenches, like gallants who come and knock and go in at any hour, however late it may be?" "Let us first of all find out the palace for certain," replied Don Quixote, "and then I will tell thee, Sancho, what we had best do. But look, Sancho, for either I see badly, or that dark mass that one sees from here should be Dulcinea's palace." "Then let your worship lead the way," said Sancho, "perhaps it may be so, though I see it with my eyes and touch it with my hands, I'll believe it as much as I believe it is daylight now." Don Quixote took the lead, and having gone a matter of 200 paces he came upon the mass that produced the shade, and found it was a great tower, and then he perceived that the building in question was no palace, but the chief church of the town, and said he, "It's the church we have lit upon, Sancho." "So I see," said Sancho, "and God grant we may not light upon our graves, it is no good sign to find oneself wandering in a graveyard at this time of night, and that, after my telling your worship, if I don't mistake, that the house of this lady will be in an alley without an outlet." "The curse of God on thee for a blockhead," said Don Quixote, "where hast thou ever heard of castles and royal palaces being built in alleys without an outlet?" "Señor," replied Sancho, "every country has a way of its own, perhaps here in El Toboso it is the way to build palaces and grand buildings in alleys, so I entreat your worship to let me search about among these streets or alleys before me, and perhaps, in some corner or other, I may stumble on this palace, and I wish I saw the dogs eating it for leading us such a dance." "Speak respectfully of what belongs to my lady, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "let us keep the feast in peace, and not throw the rope after the bucket." "I'll hold my tongue," said Sancho, "but how am I to take it patiently when your worship wants me, with only once seeing the house of our mistress, to know always, and find it in the middle of the night, when your worship can't find it, who must have seen it thousands of times?" "Thou wilt drive me to desperation, Sancho," said Don Quixote. "Look here, heretic, have I not told thee 1,000 times that I have never once in my life seen the peerless Dulcinea or crossed the threshold of her palace, and that I am enamored solely by hearsay and by the great reputation she bears for beauty and discretion?" "I hear it now," returned Sancho, "and I may tell you that if you have not seen her, no more have I." "That cannot be," said Don Quixote, "for, at any rate, thou saidst, on bringing back the answer to the letter I sent by thee, that thou sawest her sifting wheat." "Don't mind that, Señor," said Sancho, "I must tell you that my seeing her and the answer I brought you back were by hearsay too, for I can no more tell who the lady Dulcinea is than I can hit the sky." "Sancho, Sancho, said Don Quixote, there are times for jests and times when jests are out of place. If I tell thee that I have neither seen nor spoken to the lady of my heart, it is no reason why thou shouldst say thou hast not spoken to her or seen her, when the contrary is the case, as thou well knowest. While the two were engaged in this conversation, they perceived someone with a pair of mules approaching the spot where they stood, and from the noise the plough made, as it dragged along the ground, they guessed him to be some laborer who had got up before daybreak to go to his work, and so it proved to be. He came along singing the ballad that says, "Ill did ye fare, ye men of France, in Ronthes by his chase." "May I die, Sancho," said Don Quixote, when he heard him, "if any good will come to us tonight. Dost thou not hear what that clown is singing?" "I do," said Sancho, "but what has Ronthes by his chase to do with what we have in hand? He might just as well be singing the ballad of Calainos, for any good or ill that can come to us in our business." By this time the laborer had come up, and Don Quixote asked him, "Can you tell me, worthy friend, and God speed you, whereabouts here is the palace of the peerless Prince Estonia Dulcinea del Toboso?" "Señor," replied the lad, "I am a stranger, and I have been only a few days in the town, doing farm work for a rich farmer. In that house opposite there live the curate of the village and the sacristan, and both or either of them will be able to give your worship some account of this lady princess, for they have a list of all the people of El Toboso, though it is my belief there is not a princess living in the whole of it. Many ladies there are, of quality, and in her own house each of them may be a princess." "Well, then, she I am inquiring for will be one of these, my friend," said Don Quixote. "Maybe so," replied the lad, "God be with you, for here comes the daylight," and without waiting for any more of his questions, he whipped on his mules. Sancho, seeing his master downcast and somewhat dissatisfied, said to him, "Señor, daylight will be here before long, and it will not do for us to let the sun find us in the street. It will be better for us to quit the city, and for your worship to hide in some forest in the neighborhood, and I will come back in the daytime, and I won't leave a nook or corner of the whole village that I won't search for the house, castle, or palace, of my lady, and it will be hard luck for me if I don't find it, and as soon as I have found it I will speak to her grace, and tell her where and how your worship is waiting for her to arrange some plan for you to see her without any damage to her honor and reputation." "Sancho," said Don Quixote, "thou hast delivered 1,000 sentences condensed in the compass of a few words. I thank thee for the advice thou hast given me, and take it most gladly. Come, my son, let us go look for some place where I may hide, while thou dost return, as thou sayest, to seek, and speak with my lady, from whose discretion and courtesy I look for favors more than miraculous." Sancho was in a fever to get his master out of the town, lest he should discover the falsehood of the reply he had brought to him in the Sierra Morena on behalf of Dulcinea. So he hastened their departure, which they took at once, and 2 miles out of the village they found a forest or thicket wherein Don Quixote ensconced himself, while Sancho returned to the city to speak to Dulcinea, in which embassy things befell him which demand fresh attention and a new chapter. Chapter 10. Wherein is related the crafty device Sancho adopted to enchant the lady Dulcinea, and other incidents as ludicrous as they are true. When the author of this great history comes to relate what is set down in this chapter, he says he would have preferred to pass it over in silence, fearing it would not be believed, because here Don Quixote's madness reaches the confines of the greatest that can be conceived, and even goes a couple of bowshots beyond the greatest. But after all, though still under the same fear and apprehension, he has recorded it without adding to the story or leaving out a particle of the truth, and entirely disregarding the charges of falsehood that might be brought against him, and he was right. For the truth may run fine but will not break, and always rises above falsehood as oil above water. And so, going on with his story, he says that as soon as Don Quixote had ensconced himself in the forest, oak grove, or wood near El Toboso, he bade Sancho return to the city, and not come into his presence again without having first spoken on his behalf to his lady, and begged of her that it might be her good pleasure to permit herself to be seen by her enslaved knight, and deign to bestow her blessing upon him, so that he might thereby hope for a happy issue in all his encounters and difficult enterprises. Sancho undertook to execute the task according to the instructions, and to bring back an answer as good as the one he brought back before. "Go, my son," said Don Quixote, "and be not dazed when thou findest thyself exposed to the light of that sun of beauty thou art going to seek. Happy thou, above all the squires in the world. Bear in mind, and let it not escape thy memory, how she receives thee. If she changes color while thou art giving her my message, if she is agitated and disturbed at hearing my name, if she cannot rest upon her cushion, shouldst thou haply find her seated in the sumptuous state chamber proper to her rank, and should she be standing, Observe if she poises herself now on one foot, now on the other, if she repeats two or three times the reply she gives thee, if she passes from gentleness to austerity, from asperity to tenderness, if she raises her hand to smooth her hair though it be not disarranged. In short, my son, observe all her actions and motions, for if thou wilt report them to me as they were, I will gather what she hides in the recesses of her heart as regards my love, for I would have thee know, Sancho, if thou knowest it not, that with lovers the outward actions and motions they give way to when their loves are in question are the faithful messengers that carry the news of what is going on in the depths of their hearts. Go, my friend, may better fortune than mine attend thee, and bring thee a happier issue than that which I await and dread in this dreary solitude. I will go and return quickly, said Sancho, cheer up that little heart of yours, master mine, for at the present moment you seem to have got one no bigger than a hazelnut. Remember what they say, that a stout heart breaks bad luck, and that where there are no fletches there are no pigs, and moreover they say, the hare jumps up where it's not looked for. I say this because, if we could not find my lady's palaces or castles tonight, now that it is daylight I count upon finding them when I least expect it, and once found, leave it to me to manage her. Verily, Sancho, said Don Quixote, thou dost always bring in thy proverbs happily, whatever we deal with, may God give me better luck in what I am anxious about. With this, Sancho wheeled about and gave Dapple the stick, and Don Quixote remained behind, seated on his horse, resting in his stirrups and leaning on the end of his lance, filled with sad and troubled forebodings, and there we will leave him, and accompany Sancho, who went off no less serious and troubled than he left his master, so much so, that as soon as he had got out of the thicket, and looking round saw that Don Quixote was not within sight, he dismounted from his ass, and seating himself at the foot of a tree began to commune with himself, saying, Now, brother Sancho, let us know where your worship is going. Are you going to look for some ass that has been lost? Not at all. Then what are you going to look for? I am going to look for a princess, that's all, and in her for the sun of beauty and the whole heaven at once. And where do you expect to find all this, Sancho? Where? Why, in the great city of El Toboso. Well, and for whom are you going to look for her? For the famous knight Don Quixote of La Mancha, who rights wrongs, gives food to those who thirst and drink to the hungry. That's all very well, but do you know her house, Sancho? My master says it will be some royal palace or grand castle. And have you ever seen her by any chance? Neither I nor my master ever saw her. And does it strike you that it would be just and right if the El Toboso people, finding out that you were here with the intention of going to tamper with their princesses and trouble their ladies, were to come and cudgel your ribs, and not leave a whole bone in you? They would, indeed, have very good reason, if they did not see that I am under orders, and that you are a messenger, my friend, no blame belongs to you. Don't you trust to that, Sancho, for the Manchegan folk are as hot-tempered as they are honest, and won't put up with liberties from anybody. By the Lord, if they get scent of you, it will be worse for you, I promise you. Be off, you scoundrel. Let the bolt fall. Why should I go looking for 3 feet on a cat, to please another man, and what is more, when looking for Dulcinea will be looking for Marica in Ravenna, or the bachelor in Salamanca. The devil and nobody else, has mixed me up in this business. Such was the soliloquy Sancho held with himself, and all the conclusion he could come to was to say to himself again, well, there's remedy for everything except death, under whose yoke we have all to pass, whether we like it or not, when life's finished. I have seen by 1,000 signs that this master of mine is a madman fit to be tied, and for that matter, I too, am not behind him, for I'm a greater fool than he is when I follow him and serve him. If there's any truth in the proverb that says, tell me what company thou keepest, and I'll tell thee what thou art, or in that other, not with whom thou art bred, but with whom thou art fed. Well then, if he be mad, as he is, and with a madness that mostly takes one thing for another, and white for black, and black for white, as was seen when he said the windmills were giants, and the monks mules dromedaries, flocks of sheep armies of enemies, and much more to the same tune, it will not be very hard to make him believe that some country girl, the first I come across here, is the Lady Dulcinea, and if he does not believe it, I'll swear it, and if he should swear, I'll swear again, and if he persists I'll persist still more, so as, come what may, to have my quoit always over the peg. Maybe, by holding out in this way, I may put a stop to his sending me on messages of this kind another time, or maybe he will think, as I suspect he will, that one of those wicked enchanters, who he says have a spite against him, has changed her form for the sake of doing him an ill turn and injuring him. With this reflection Sancho made his mind easy, counting the business as good as settled, and stayed there till the afternoon so as to make Don Quixote think he had time enough to go to El Toboso and return, and things turned out so luckily for him that as he got up to Mount Apple, he spied, coming from El Toboso towards the spot where he stood, three peasant girls on three colts, or fillies, for the author does not make the point clear, though it is more likely they were she-asses, the usual mount with village girls, but as it is of no great consequence, we need not stop to prove it. To be brief, the instant Sancho saw the peasant girls, he returned full speed to seek his master, and found him sighing and uttering a thousand passionate lamentations. When Don Quixote saw him he exclaimed, "What news, Sancho, my friend? Am I to mark this day with a white stone or a black?"
"Your worship," replied Sancho, "had better mark it with ruddle, like the inscriptions on the walls of classrooms, that those who see it may see it plain."
"Then thou bringest good news," said Don Quixote.
"So good," replied Sancho, "that your worship has only to spur Rocinante and get out into the open field to see the lady Dulcinea del Toboso, who, with two others, damsels of hers, is coming to see your worship."
"Holy God! What art thou saying, Sancho, my friend?" exclaimed Don Quixote. "Take care thou art not deceiving me, or seeking by false joy to cheer my real sadness."
"What could I get by deceiving your worship," returned Sancho, "especially when it will so soon be shown whether I tell the truth or not? Come, senor, push on, and you will see the princess our mistress coming, robed and adorned in fact, like what she is. Her damsels and she are all one glow of gold, all bunches of pearls, all diamonds, all rubies, all cloth of brocade of more than 10 borders, with their hair loose on their shoulders like so many sunbeams playing with the wind, and moreover, they come mounted on 3 piebald cackneys, the finest sight ever you saw."
"Hackneys, you mean, Sancho," said Don Quixote.
"There is not much difference between cackneys and hackneys," said Sancho, "but no matter what they come on, there they are, the finest ladies one could wish for, especially my lady the Princess Dulcinea, who staggers one's senses."
"Let us go, Sancho, my son," said Don Quixote, "and in guerdon of this news, as unexpected as it is good, I bestow upon thee the best spoil I shall win in the first adventure I may have, or if that does not satisfy thee, I promise thee the foals I shall have this year from my 3 mares that thou knowest are in full on our village common."
"I'll take the foals," said Sancho, "for it is not quite certain that the spoils of the first adventure will be good ones."
By this time they had cleared the wood, and saw the 3 village lasses close at hand. Don Quixote looked all along the road to El Toboso, and as he could see nobody except the 3 peasant girls, he was completely puzzled, and asked Sancho if it was outside the city he had left them.
"How outside the city?" returned Sancho. "Are your worship's eyes in the back of your head, that you can't see that they are these who are coming here, shining like the very sun at noonday?"
"I see nothing, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "but 3 country girls on 3 jackasses.
"Now, may God deliver me from the devil," said Sancho, "and can it be that your worship takes 3 hackneys or whatever they're called as wide as the driven snow, for jackasses? By the Lord, I could tear my beard if that was the case."
"Well, I can only say, Sancho, my friend," said Don Quixote, "that it is as plain they are jackasses or jennyasses as that I am Don Quixote, and thou Sancho Panza, at any rate, they seem to me to be so."
"Hush, senor," said Sancho, "don't talk that way, but open your eyes, and come and pay your respects to the lady of your thoughts, who is close upon us now," and with these words he advanced to receive the 3 village lasses, and dismounting from Dapple, caught hold of one of the asses of the 3 country girls by the halter, and dropping on both knees on the ground, he said, "Queen and Princess and Duchess of Beauty, may it please your haughtiness and greatness to receive into your favor and goodwill your captive knight who stands there turned into marble stone, and quite stupefied and benumbed at finding himself in your magnificent presence. I am Sancho Panza, his squire, and he the vagabond knight Don Quixote of La Mancha, otherwise called the Knight of the Rueful Countenance."
Don Quixote had by this time placed himself on his knees beside Sancho, and, with eyes starting out of his head and a puzzled gaze, was regarding her whom Sancho called queen and lady, and as he could see nothing in her except a village lass, and not a very well-favored one, for she was platter-faced and snub-nosed, he was perplexed and bewildered, and did not venture to open his lips. The country girls, at the same time, were astonished to see these 2 men, so different in appearance, on their knees, preventing their companion from going on. She, however, who had been stopped, breaking silence, said angrily and testily, "Get out of the way, bad luck to you, and let us pass, for we are in a hurry." To which Sancho returned, "Oh, Princess and Universal Lady of El Toboso, is not your magnanimous heart softened by seeing the pillar and prop of knight-errantry on his knees before your sublimated presence? On hearing this, one of the others exclaimed, "Woe then! Why, I'm rubbing thee down, she ass of my father-in-law. See how the lordlings come to make game of the village girls now, as if we here could not chaff as well as themselves. Go your own way, and let us go ours, and it will be better for you."
"Get up, Sancho," said Don Quixote at this, "I see that fortune, with evil done to me unsated still, has taken possession of all the roads by which any comfort may reach this wretched soul that I carry in my flesh. And thou, highest perfection of excellence that can be desired, utmost limit of grace in human shape, sole relief of this afflicted heart that adores thee, though the malign enchanter that persecutes me has brought clouds and cataracts on my eyes, and to them, and them only, transformed thy unparagoned beauty and changed thy features into those of a poor peasant girl, if so be he has not at the same time changed mine into those of some monster to render them loathsome in thy sight, refuse not to look upon me with tenderness and love, seeing in this submission that I make on my knees to thy transformed beauty the humility with which my soul adores thee."
"Heyday! My grandfather!" cried the girl, "much I care for your lovemaking. Get out of the way and let us pass, and we'll thank you." Sancho stood aside and let her go, very well pleased to have got so well out of the hobble he was in. The instant the village lass who had done duty for Dulcinea found herself free, prodding her cackney with a spike she had at the end of a stick, she set off at full speed across the field. The she-ass, however, feeling the point more acutely than usual, began cutting such capers, that it flung the lady Dulcinea to the ground, seeing which, Don Quixote ran to raise her up, and Sancho to fix and girth the pack saddle, which also had slipped under the ass's belly. The pack saddle being secured, as Don Quixote was about to lift up his enchanted mistress in his arms and put her upon her beast, the lady, getting up from the ground, saved him the trouble, for, going back a little, she took a short run, and putting both hands on the croup of the ass she dropped into the saddle more lightly than a falcon, and sat astride like a man, whereat Sancho said, "Rogue! But our lady is lighter than a lantern, and might teach the cleverest Cordovan or Mexican how to mount." She cleared the back of the saddle in one jump, and without spurs she is making the hackney go like a zebra, and her damsels are no way behind her, for they all fly like the wind, which was the truth, for as soon as they saw Dulcinea mounted, they pushed on after her, and sped away without looking back, for more than half a league. Don Quixote followed them with his eyes, and when they were no longer in sight, he turned to Sancho and said, "How now, Sancho? Thou seest how I am hated by enchanters. And see to what a length the malice and spite they bear me go, when they seek to deprive me of the happiness it would give me to see my lady in her own proper form. The fact is I was born to be an example of misfortune, and the target and mark at which the arrows of adversity are aimed and directed. Observe too, Sancho, that these traitors were not content with changing and transforming my Dulcinea, but they transformed and changed her into a shape as mean and ill-favored as that of the village girl yonder, and at the same time they robbed her of that which is such a peculiar property of ladies of distinction, that is to say, the sweet fragrance that comes of being always among perfumes and flowers. For I must tell thee, Sancho, that when I approached to put Dulcinea upon her hackney, as thou sayest it was, though to me it appeared as she ass, she gave me a whiff of raw garlic that made my head reel, and poisoned my very heart."
"O scum of the earth!" cried Sancho at this, "O miserable, spiteful enchanters! Oh that I could see you all strung by the gills, like sardines on a twig! Ye know a great deal, ye can do a great deal, and ye do a great deal more. It ought to have been enough for you, ye scoundrels, to have changed the pearls of my lady's eyes into oak galls, and her hair of purest gold into the bristles of a red ox's tail, and in short, all her features from fair to foul, without meddling with her smell, for by that we might somehow have found out what was hidden underneath that ugly rind, though, to tell the truth, I never perceived her ugliness, but only her beauty, which was raised to the highest pitch of perfection by a mole she had on her right lip, like a mustache, with 7 or 8 red hairs like threads of gold, and more than a palm long." "From the correspondence which exists between those of the face and those of the body," said Don Quixote, "Dulcinea must have another mole resembling that on the thick of the thigh on that side on which she has the one on her face, but hairs of the length thou hast mentioned are very long for moles."
"Well, all I can say is they were as plain as could be," replied Sancho.
"I believe it, my friend," returned Don Quixote, "for nature bestowed nothing on Dulcinea that was not perfect and well finished, and so, if she had 100 moles like the one thou hast described, in her they would not be moles, but moons and shining stars. But tell me, Sancho, that which seemed to me to be a pack saddle as thou wert fixing it,
Was it a flat saddle or a side saddle?
It was neither, replied Sancho, but a Gineta saddle, with a field covering worth half a kingdom, so rich is it.
And that I could not see all this, Sancho, said Don Quixote, once more I say, and will say 1,000 times, I am the most unfortunate of men.
Sancho, the rogue, had enough to do to hide his laughter, at hearing the simplicity of the master he had so nicely befooled. At length, after a good deal more conversation had passed between them, they remounted their beasts, and followed the road to Saragossa, which they expected to reach in time to take part in a certain grand festival which is held every year in that illustrious city. But before they got there, things happened to them, so many, so important, and so strange, that they deserve to be recorded and read, as will be seen farther on.
1 Chapter 11. Of the strange adventure which the valiant Don Quixote had with the car or cart of the Cortes of Death. Dejected beyond measure did Don Quixote pursue his journey, turning over in his mind the cruel trick the enchanters had played him in changing his lady Dulcinea into the vile shape of the village lass, nor could he think of any way of restoring her to her original form, and these reflections so absorbed him, that without being aware of it he let go Rocinante's bridle, and he, perceiving the liberty that was granted him, stopped at every step to crop the fresh grass with which the plain abounded. Sancho recalled him from his reverie.
Melancholy, senor, said he, was made, not for beasts, but for men. But if men give way to it overmuch they turn to beasts, control yourself, your worship, be yourself again, gather up Rocinante's reins, cheer up, rouse yourself and show that gallant spirit that knights errant ought to have. What the devil is this? What weakness is this? Are we here or in France? The devil fly away with all the Dulcineas in the world, for the well-being of a single knight errant is of more consequence than all the enchantments and transformations on earth.
Hush, Sancho, said Don Quixote in a weak and faint voice, hush and utter no blasphemies against that enchanted lady, for I alone am to blame for her misfortune and hard fate, her calamity has come of the hatred the wicked bear me.
So say I, returned Sancho, his heart rent in twain, I trow, who saw her once, to see her now.
Thou mayest well say that, Sancho, replied Don Quixote, as thou sawest her in the full perfection of her beauty, for the enchantment does not go so far as to pervert thy vision or hide her loveliness from thee, against me alone and against my eyes is the strength of its venom directed. Nevertheless, there is one thing which has occurred to me, and that is that thou didst ill describe her beauty to me, for, as well as I recollect, thou saidst that her eyes were pearls, but eyes that are like pearls are rather the eyes of a sea bream than of a lady, and I am persuaded that Dulcinea's must be green emeralds, full and soft, with two rainbows for eyebrows. Take away those pearls from her eyes and transfer them to her teeth, for beyond a doubt, Sancho, thou hast taken the one for the other, the eyes for the teeth.
Very likely, said Sancho, for her beauty bewildered me as much as her ugliness did your worship, but let us leave it all to God, who alone knows what is to happen in this vale of tears, in this evil world of ours, where there is hardly a thing to be found without some mixture of wickedness, roguery, and rascality.
But one thing, senor, troubles me more than all the rest, and that is thinking what is to be done when your worship conquers some giant, or some other knight, and orders him to go and present himself before the beauty of the lady Dulcinea. Where is this poor giant, or this poor wretch of a vanquished knight, to find her? I think I can see them wandering all over El Toboso, looking like naughties, and asking for my lady Dulcinea, and even if they meet her in the middle of the street they won't know her any more than they would my father.
Perhaps, Sancho, returned Don Quixote, the enchantment does not go so far as to deprive conquered and presented giants and knights of the power of recognizing Dulcinea. We will try by experiment with one or two of the first I vanquish and send to her, whether they see her or not, by commanding them to return and give me an account of what happened to them in this respect.
I declare, I think what your worship has proposed is excellent, said Sancho, and that by this plan we shall find out what we want to know, and if it be that it is only from your worship she is hidden, the misfortune will be more yours than hers. But so long as the lady Dulcinea is well and happy, we on our part will make the best of it, and get on as well as we can, seeking our adventures, and leaving time to take his own course, for he is the best physician for these and greater ailments.
Don Quixote was about to reply to Sancho Panza, but he was prevented by a cart crossing the road full of the most diverse and strange personages and figures that could be imagined. He who led the mules and acted as carter was a hideous demon, the cart was open to the sky, without a tilt or cane roof, and the first figure that presented itself to Don Quixote's eyes was that of Death itself with a human face, next to it was an angel with large painted wings, and at one side an emperor, with the crown, to all appearance of gold, on his head.
At the feet of death was the god called Cupid, without his bandage, but with his bow, quiver, and arrows. There was also a knight in full armor, except that he had no morion or helmet, but only a hat decked with plumes of divers colors, and along with these there were others with a variety of costumes and faces. All this, unexpectedly encountered, took Don Quixote somewhat aback, and struck terror into the heart of Sancho, but the next instant Don Quixote was glad of it, believing that some new perilous adventure was presenting itself to him, and under this impression, and with a spirit prepared to face any danger, he planted himself in front of the cart, and in a loud and menacing tone, exclaimed, "Carter, or coachman, or devil, or whatever thou art, tell me at once who thou art, whither thou art going, and who these folk are thou carriest in thy wagon, which looks more like Charon's boat than an ordinary cart." To which the devil, stopping the cart, answered quietly, "Señor, we are players of Angulo el Malo's company. We have been acting the play of the Cortes of Death this morning, which is the octave of Corpus Christi, in a village behind that hill, and we have to act it this afternoon in that village which you can see from this, and as it is so near, and to save the trouble of undressing and dressing again, we go in the costumes in which we perform. That lad there appears as Death, that other as an angel, that woman, the manager's wife, plays the queen, this one the soldier, that the emperor, and I the devil, and I am one of the principal characters of the play, for in this company I take the leading parts. If you want to know anything more about us, ask me and I will answer with the utmost exactitude, for as I am a devil I am up to everything." "By the faith of a knight-errant," replied Don Quixote, "when I saw this cart I fancied some great adventure was presenting itself to me, but I declare one must touch with the hand what appears to the eye, if illusions are to be avoided. God speed you, good people, keep your festival, and remember, if you demand of me aught wherein I can render you a service, I will do it gladly and willingly, for from a child I was fond of the play, and in my youth a keen lover of the actor's art." While they were talking, fate so willed it that one of the company in a mummer's dress with a great number of bells, and armed with three blown ox bladders at the end of a stick, joined them, and this merry andrew approaching Don Quixote, began flourishing his stick and banging the ground with the bladders and cutting capers with great jingling of the bells, which untoward apparition so startled Rocinante that, in spite of Don Quixote's efforts to hold him in, taking the bit between his teeth he set off across the plain with greater speed than the bones of his anatomy ever gave any promise of. Sancho, who thought his master was in danger of being thrown, jumped off Dapple, and ran in all haste to help him, but by the time he reached him he was already on the ground, and beside him was Rocinante, who had come down with his master, the usual end and upshot of Rocinante's vivacity and high spirits. But the moment Sancho quitted his beast to go and help Don Quixote, the dancing devil with the bladders jumped up on Dapple, and beating him with them, more by the fright and the noise than by the pain of the blows, made him fly across the fields towards the village where they were going to hold their festival. Sancho witnessed Dapple's career and his master's fall, and did not know which of the two cases of need he should attend to first, but in the end, like a good squire and good servant, he let his love for his master prevail over his affection for his ass, though every time he saw the bladders rise in the air and come down on the hindquarters of his Dapple he felt the pains and terrors of death, and he would have rather had the blows fall on the apples of his own eyes than on the least hair of his ass's tail. In this trouble and perplexity he came to where Don Quixote lay in a far sorrier plight than he liked, and having helped him to mount Rocinante, he said to him, "Señor, the devil has carried off my Dapple."
"What devil?" asked Don Quixote.
"The one with the bladders," said Sancho.
"Then I will recover him," said Don Quixote, "even if he be shut up with him in the deepest and darkest dungeons of hell. Follow me, Sancho, for the cart goes slowly, and with the mules of it I will make good the loss of Dapple."
"You need not take the trouble, señor," said Sancho, "keep cool, for as I now see, the devil has let Dapple go and he is coming back to his old quarters," and so it turned out, for, having come down with Dapple, in imitation of Don Quixote and Rocinante, the devil made off on foot to the town, and the ass came back to his master.
"For all that," said Don Quixote, "it will be well to visit the discourtesy of the devil upon some of those in the cart, even if it were the emperor himself."
"Don't think of it, your worship," returned Sancho, "take my advice and never meddle with actors, for they are a favored class. I myself have known an actor taken up for two murders, and yet come off scot-free. Remember that, as they are merry folk who give pleasure, everyone favors and protects them, and helps and makes much of them, above all when they are those of the royal companies and under patent, all or most of whom in dress and appearance look like princes."
"Still, for all that," said Don Quixote, "the player devil must not go off boasting, even if the whole human race favors him."
So saying, he made for the cart, which was now very near the town, shouting out as he went, "Stay! Halt! Ye merry, jovial crew! I want to teach you how to treat asses and animals that serve the squires of knights errant for steeds." So loud were the shouts of Don Quixote, that those in the cart heard and understood them, and, guessing by the words what the speaker's intention was, Death in an instant jumped out of the cart, and the emperor, the devil carter and the angel after him, nor did the queen or the god Cupid stay behind, and all armed themselves with stones and formed in line, prepared to receive Don Quixote on the points of their pebbles. Don Quixote, when he saw them drawn up in such a gallant array with uplifted arms ready for a mighty discharge of stones, checked Rocinante and began to consider in what way he could attack them with the least danger to himself. As he halted, Sancho came up, and seeing him disposed to attack this well-ordered squadron, said to him, "It would be the height of madness to attempt such an enterprise. Remember, senor, that against sops from the brook, and plenty of them, there is no defensive armor in the world, except to stow oneself away under a brass bell, and besides, one should remember that it is rashness, and not valor, for a single man to attack an army that has death in it, and where emperors fight in person, with angels, good and bad, to help them. And if this reflection will not make you keep quiet, perhaps it will to know for certain that among all these, though they look like kings, princes, and emperors, there is not a single knight errant." "Now indeed thou hast hit the point, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "which may and should turn me from the resolution I had already formed. I cannot and must not draw sword, as I have many a time before told thee, against anyone who is not a dubbed knight. It is for thee, Sancho, if thou wilt, to take vengeance for the wrong done to thy Dapple, and I will help thee from here by shouts and salutary counsels." "There is no occasion to take vengeance on anyone, senor," replied Sancho, "for it is not the part of good Christians to revenge wrongs, and besides, I will arrange it with my ass to leave his grievance to my good will and pleasure, and that is to live in peace as long as heaven grants me life." "Well," said Don Quixote, "if that be thy determination, good Sancho, sensible Sancho, Christian Sancho, honest Sancho, let us leave these phantoms alone and turn to the pursuit of better and worthier adventures, for, from what I see of this country, we cannot fail to find plenty of marvelous ones in it." He at once wheeled about, Sancho ran to take possession of his Dapple, Death and his flying squadron returned to their cart and pursued their journey, and thus the dread adventure of the cart of Death ended happily, thanks to the advice Sancho gave his master, who had, the following day, a fresh adventure, of no less thrilling interest than the last, with an enamored knight-errant. Chapter 12. Of the strange adventure which befell the valiant Don Quixote with the bold Knight of the Mirrors. The night succeeding the day of the encounter with Death, Don Quixote and his squire passed under some tall shady trees, and Don Quixote at Sancho's persuasion ate a little from the store carried by Dapple, and over their supper Sancho said to his master, "Señor, what a fool I should have looked if I had chosen for my reward the spoils of the first adventure your worship achieved, instead of the foals of the three mares. After all, a sparrow in the hand is better than a vulture on the wing." "At the same time, Sancho," replied Don Quixote, "if thou hadst let me attack them as I wanted, at the very least the emperor's gold crown and Cupid's painted wings would have fallen to thee as spoils, for I should have taken them by force and given them into thy hands." "The scepters and crowns of those play-actor emperors," said Sancho, "were never yet pure gold, but only brass foil or tin." "That is true," said Don Quixote, "for it would not be right that the accessories of the drama should be real, instead of being mere fictions and semblances, like the drama itself, towards which, Sancho, and, as a necessary consequence, towards those who represent and produce it I would that thou wert favorably disposed, for they are all instruments of great good to the state, placing before us at every step a mirror in which we may see vividly displayed what goes on in human life, nor is there any similitude that shows us more faithfully what we are and ought to be than the play and the players. Come, tell me, hast thou not seen a play acted in which kings, emperors, pontiffs, knights, ladies, and divers other personages were introduced? One plays the villain, another the knave, this one the merchant, that the soldier, one the sharp-witted fool, another the foolish lover, and when the play is over, and they have put off the dresses they wore in it, all the actors become equal."
"Yes, I have seen that," said Sancho.
"Well then," said Don Quixote, "the same thing happens in the comedy and life of this world, where some play emperors, others popes, and, in short, all the characters that can be brought into a play, but when it is over, that is to say when life ends, death strips them all of the garments that distinguish one from the other, and all are equal in the grave."
"A fine comparison," said Sancho, "though not so new but that I have heard it many and many a time,
as well as that other one of the game of chess, how, so long as the game lasts, each piece has its own particular office, and when the game is finished they are all mixed, jumbled up and shaken together, and stowed away in the bag, which is much like ending life in the grave.
"Thou art growing less doltish and more shrewd every day, Sancho," said Don Quixote.
"Eh," said Sancho, "it must be that some of your worship's shrewdness sticks to me, land that, of itself, is barren and dry, will come to yield good fruit if you dung it and till it. What I mean is that your worship's conversation has been the dung that has fallen on the barren soil of my dry wit, and the time I have been in your service and society has been the tillage, and with the help of this I hope to yield fruit in abundance that will not fall away or slide from those paths of good breeding that your worship has made in my parched understanding."
Don Quixote laughed at Sancho's affected phraseology, and perceived that what he said about his improvement was true, for now and then he spoke in a way that surprised him, though always, or mostly, when Sancho tried to talk fine and attempted polite language, he wound up by toppling over from the summit of his simplicity into the abyss of his ignorance, and where he showed his culture and his memory to the greatest advantage was in dragging in proverbs, no matter whether they had any bearing or not upon the subject in hand, as may have been seen already and will be noticed in the course of this history. In conversation of this kind they passed a good part of the night, but Sancho felt a desire to let down the curtains of his eyes, as he used to say when he wanted to go to sleep, and stripping Dapple he left him at liberty to graze his fill. He did not remove Rosinante's saddle, as his master's express orders were, that so long as they were in the field or not sleeping under a roof Rosinante was not to be stripped, the ancient usage established and observed by knights errant being to take off the bridle and hang it on the saddle bow, but to remove the saddle from the horse never. Sancho acted accordingly, and gave him the same liberty he had given Dapple, between whom and Rosinante there was a friendship so unequaled and so strong, that it is handed down by tradition from father to son, that the author of this veracious history devoted some special chapters to it, which, in order to preserve the propriety and decorum due to a history so heroic, he did not insert therein, although at times he forgets this resolution of his and describes how eagerly the two beasts would scratch one another when they were together and how, when they were tired or full, Rosinante would lay his neck across Dapple's, stretching half a yard or more on the other side, and the pair would stand thus, gazing thoughtfully on the ground, for 3 days, or at least so long as they were left alone, or hunger did not drive them to go and look for food. I may add that they say the author left it on record that he likened their friendship to that of Nisus and Euryalus, and Pylades and Orestes, and if that be so, it may be perceived, to the admiration of mankind, how firm the friendship must have been between these two peaceful animals, shaming men, who preserve friendships with one another so badly. This was why it was said, "For friend no longer is their friend, the reeds turn lances now." And someone else has sung, "Friend to friend the bug," etc. And let no one fancy that the author was at all astray when he compared the friendship of these animals to that of men, for men have received many lessons from beasts, and learned many important things, as, for example, the cluster from the stork, vomit and gratitude from the dog, watchfulness from the crane, foresight from the ant,